This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. This is a show about ideas, people, and behaviors that are considered inappropriate, out of bounds, or beyond the pale. The things you're not supposed to talk about if you're a school teacher, a college professor, a businessman, a politician, a parent, a neighbor, or even a podcast host. These are the things you're not supposed to say or even think if you're a good liberal, a good conservative, or a good citizen. Each week, I'll interview a person who has something bad to say. They might be a journalist or a professor. They might be a porn star or a drug dealer. They might just be an ordinary person with an ordinary job who doesn't care about the rules of polite society. I'm not interested in breaking the rules just to be a troublemaker. I'm interested in people who break the rules of conventional thought and who expand the scope of what is possible to say in our society. I'm interested in people who make me think. Right now, Katie Herzog is a staff writer for the Stranger newspaper in Seattle. But I think, and I hope, she's the future. This is my interview with Katie Herzog. God, I'm in like one of the most prestigious places in my world. I've wanted to be, you don't know this, Katie, but I've wanted to be a journalist for an alt weekly like The Stranger since I was about 18 years old.
Well, you are in the belly of the beast right now.
I know. We're in the offices of The Stranger, which is the premier alt weekly, not just in Seattle, but right now, we were just saying, I think in the country.
You know, I got to interrupt you for a second. Sure. We're actually an alt biweekly, so we are definitely the preeminent alt biweekly in the country.
Okay. I think you're both.
Yes, we go both
because
ways.
It's a social construct, this whole biweekly thing, anyway,
that
whatever that means. No, it is. It's, I think, you know, of course, I have all sorts of disagreements with it politically on certain things, but I do think the quality of writing is very, very high and very smart and very, most importantly, challenging and I was going to use the word that you and I use all the time. It's queer, goddammit. I mean, it's just the sensibility of it is queer. The politics of it are generally what I would call queer. You identify as queer. I've heard you identify as queer.
Yeah, that's a term that I have some thoughts on this term.
I bet you do.
Yeah, so I'm 35, and I would say that I identified as queer for most of my 20s. And I actually remember the first time that I heard the term queer used in a non-derogatory way. And it was I lived in Portland. I moved to Portland right after college. So I was like, you know, 22. And I worked at a coffee shop. And one of my coworkers at the coffee shop said the term, referred to herself as queer. And I was really shocked and sort of appalled by this. And this was in, I guess, 2005. And she educated me, oh, no, we've taken this term back. And then I immediately adopted it. And I became one of those people who proclaim my queerness at every opportunity. So, you know, someone at the grocery store would be like, paper or plastic? And I'd be like, I'm queer. but now, as I have gotten older and the term has evolved to, I think, become sort of meaningless now. Everything is queer. Queer seems more about haircuts to me now than actual sexual orientation, that I have re-embraced the term lesbian. Mm-hmm. So I don't really call myself queer anymore. I'm sort of I'm a regular lesbian.
Yeah, I haven't gone that far. I don't call myself a lesbian, but I do call myself queer sometimes.
You can call yourself a lesbian.
Well, sure. If you're really queer,
yes.
If I were really, really queer, I would.
Right. But if you called yourself a lesbian, I wouldn't be able to question that.
That's the whole point here.
It's your identity,
yeah.
Right?
So you just be quiet. Let me be a lesbian.
Yeah.
No. So let's hear your definition of queer.
Okay. I think the term queer right now means progressive. I think that it means.
Ooh, we just heard, I gotta go. This is over. You're a very nice person. You have a nice personality. I wish you the best in your career.
I'm using that in a derogatory term right now. What okay. I mean is I think queer has become a catch-all phrase for everybody who doesn't want to be like a regular old straight person. It's like queer involves people who are straight but are kinky. It involves people who are asexual. Oh. So people who literally don't have a sexual orientation, they're queer. Furries are queer. Mm-hmm. Other kins are queer. It's just become this, it's such a broad term. And I guess that's the whole point of umbrella terms. But to me, it doesn't, if somebody told me they were queer, like it used to be that if somebody told me they were queer, it told me who they slept with. That's what the term meant. And it doesn't anymore. It could mean your haircut. It could mean your shoes. It could mean that you've voted for Bernie. I just, so to me, the term has like the alphabet soup of LGBTQIAP plus hashtag whatever is just so broad that it's meaningless.
Yeah. Okay. I was with you except for the Bernie part, but that's okay. So what's progressive about that?
It's not actually progressive. Yeah, yeah. I think it's okay. Actually regressive, but it's an identity that is cool. Sort of just glommed on to like, queer, we're whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's, so, you know, I come at it from the academic side, right? The actual people who coined it as a thing that's different than just being
weird.
Dead now. What's that?
They're dead now.
They're dead? Who? Judith Butler's not dead. What are you talking about?
She should be.
She's alive and well.
Is she on Twitter? I would love to read Judith Butler's tweets about the hegemony.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's funny. Maybe you saw this. Somebody from the intellectual dark web just tweeted something. I think it was Christina Hoff Sommer, some like just little chunk of text from Gender Trouble.
I did see that.
And I was like, because, you know, I'm in the position of defending these idiots all the time. And I was like, God damn it, Judith, can you write English, please? This is really embarrassing for me. Like, it's not good.
Were you able to decipher what the sentence was trying to say?
Yes.
Can you explain
it
to me?
I think it was really just a recapitulation of what queer theory is for her, you know. But no, she's ridiculous in this way, and many of them are. And I've always said this, even though I think the core of my politics comes from them, more Michael Warner, but her too, for sure. Is that much of their writing is truly what Jordan Peterson and company say about it? It's impenetrable nonsense, or nearly that. And I don't know why they do that, except I think they're just so wrapped up in their own performativity, as they would say.
I mean, I
and
think
narcissism.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think any sort of, you know, any industry has its own vernacular, and I think that's just what academic theory bullshit is. It's just sort of like they're writing for each other. They all, I don't know if people actually understand it, if they're just pretending to, which seems likely to me. Yeah. But so they don't, you know, they don't intend it to be read by mere mortals like me.
Well, or actually, I mean, I think that they're doing what they say anyone can and should do with a text, which is make it their own.
They are definitely making it their own.
So, for instance, I often suspect with me and Jacques Derrida that that's what I'm doing, because I'm telling you, you think Judith Butler's hard to read? Jacques Derrida, and I've been an academic my whole life, I can't get much of it. And I just read that text, and of course it's translated, but still I'm like, I'm just gonna go with other people's interpretations, and I'm gonna just, okay, we're gonna make this into a cat now, this text, or maybe tomorrow it'll be a dog, and just do a Derridian reading of Derrida.
Right, right.
And that's the main point he made in his whole career. And I think if that was just the only point, that's great.
Well, if you need a translator for your translation, I think there's a problem in your writing.
Yeah, yeah.
He would not fit in well at an all-weekly or an all-bi-weekly.
No. Oh, by the way, that's one of the reasons I love that I'm talking to you, and one of the reasons I'm a fan of yours, is that you do as good. You're the opposite. You're the opposite.
Why, thank you.
In the best way, which is that you're queer, and I really mean that, and you're basically a queer theorist, essentially, and you have queer politics, but you're super clear. Like, if anybody, and we're going to do this in a minute, if anybody can explain trans politics better than you in this country or this world, I'd like to meet them.
I think some trans people would probably argue with you about that.
I'm not sure about that. I've never heard it. I've never heard you do as good a job as I've ever heard of explaining just sort of who's who and what's what and what the dynamics and issues are within trans politics. And I learned from you, and I've been studying this stuff for a long time myself, but you do it so well. And that's why you are a journalist who's actually making a difference, and you're not Judith Butler.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's true. So let's, but let's start with this amazing story, I think, because of the outcome of it, in a way. It's amazing on its own too, even if there was no special outcome. But of you made a transition from having been, correct me if I'm wrong, you made the transition from having been a tomboy to having been gender dysphoric as a child. Is that correct?
Okay, let me think about that. From having been a tomboy to having been, I think you're a little bit, you're in Butler territory here. I need you to parse that out a little bit for me.
I thought that was straight Herzog territory. That was
you. Okay, so I think that there's some.
In other words, you said, so you grew up in the 80s in North Carolina.
Right.
80s and 90s.
Right.
Correct? Okay. And you said that you were, at that time, that what the way you are were, your identity was as a tomboy.
Right.
But now,
right, yes,
that's called being gender dysphoric.
Absolutely, that's true. Yeah, I think you're,
that's what
you're,
I meant.
Absolutely,
so that,
correct,
like,
about that.
Another, yes. What I was making a joke, right?
Right,
that
right.
The world has redefined who your child, who you were as a child,
right,
for you,
yes,
already.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Which maybe, well, you talk about that. Cause,
yeah, so yeah. the term when I was a kid, I was, well, gender nonconforming is, I think, the term that would really, because dysphoria is a diagnosis.
Right. A medical diagnosis.
A medical diagnosis.
That's the nasty stuff.
Right, it's in the DSM, yeah. Which right. it's actually sort of an interesting debate, because within trans communities, a lot of trans people don't want to, they don't believe that being transgender or dysphoric is they don't think it's pathological. They don't think it's it's just like another normal human variation. And I can see why people would argue that. However, if you want insurance to pay for your top surgery or your bottom surgery or your hormone replacement therapy, it has to be diagnosable. So that's this strange, uncomfortable reality of trans politics right now.
That's a really important point that had never really stuck with me until I heard you talk about it. Yeah, that it's the medicalization of this and the fact that they have to go through the medical establishment
right.
to get what they need or want.
Well, and then, so this other thing, the interesting thing is happening in trans politics right now, where at least, you know, and this is sort of, all of this is unrolling online, where people are crazier than they are in the real world. But now there's a lot of rhetoric that you don't have to be gender dysphoric to be trans.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find confusing, because mm-hmm. why would you choose to change your gender unless you were uncomfortable with your gender? Mm-hmm. But you'll see this frequently in trans discourse.
Okay, but I was trying to talk about baseball and you changed
okay.
the subject.
Okay, I was the only girl in Little League. That is true. Yes, and I was
what position is what I wanted to know.
Unfortunately, the answer is right field. I was also the worst player in Little League. Although I just want to
go back in time and save you.
I was very cute, but also the worst player and also a girl, the only girl, which I guess I let down my sex for in that scene.
Well, you let them down, or I mean, you're the hero. I mean, come on.
I did show up to practice.
My
and
God.
The team that I played for, so I grew up in a sort of a rural redneck area, and all the teams were sponsored by local businesses. So I played for the local business known as McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And every time we won, we would get free Happy Meals. It was the happiest time of my life.
It's pretty much perfection.
Yeah.
That's what we all strive for as children, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. It's been downhill since then.
Yeah, you play the game, win or lose, you get a Happy Meal.
Or you sit on the bench, in my case, and then still get a Happy Meal.
No.
I was frequently mistaken for a boy, especially when I played baseball. I still am actually mistaken for a man. And it comes most often, for some reason, on public transit. If I'm in an airport, I am guaranteed to be called sir. And usually I travel with my girlfriend, who is actually younger than me, and people think that I'm her son all the time. All the time. She loves it, thankfully.
I'm sure. What do you think?
I think it's weird and a little uncomfortable, but it makes her happy. So if it makes her happy.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. It makes your girlfriend happy that people think that you are her son?
No, she just thinks it's funny. Because it is funny. Okay, I'm 35 years old. I have wrinkles on my
face. I'd be pissed at her.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What's her name again?
Jana.
Yeah.
Although I might have told her at one point that I would never tell her name in public. We actually refer to her as Terry. That's her code name, which is also the name of Dan Savage's husband, but it's Terry with an I.
You know, lesbians aren't supposed to be funny. Did you?
Well, she's bisexual, so.
I'm talking about you.
Oh, me. Yeah. Well, lesbians aren't funny. I mean, I've seen Hannah Gadsby.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Okay, so you played baseball. And what else did you like to do not do?
Okay, so probably the most interesting thing about me, even more interesting than my sexuality, shockingly. So I was a really serious whitewater kayaker. I started paddling when I was 12, and I was actually a professional. I was sponsored. I went around the country paddling and freestyle kayaking events. And I was also the only women under 18 doing this in the country. And so I won all of my events. So I did that until I was like 20. I was really serious about it. And now I still paddle every once in a while, but it's no
professional
longer.
Professional?
Yes.
Kayaker?
Yeah, I got paid for it. Not much.
People paid you money?
Yeah.
That's
really
amazing.
I know. And I like wore only my sponsor's clothing, so I looked like sort of a NASCAR driver all the time, but it was like Patagonia and Nike
awesome.
And shit like that. Can you curse on this podcast?
Oh, please.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I'm just soaking that. I didn't know that about you. You held that out for me. We were going through your biography before we started. I didn't know about this part. I love the athlete thing.
Yeah.
No one I know was an athlete.
Well, I'm not anymore. My only exercise now is I walk to the grocery store to buy cookies sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I was really serious about it. My brother is still really... My dad started us paddling, and he's in his 70s, and he still does it. My brother is a really excellent kayaker. He does really crazy extreme shit where he takes a float plane into Canada and spends a week on these rivers that nobody's ever done before.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow. And so this is in Asheville, right?
This was,
which is like whitewater paradise.
Yeah, it's a good place to grow up if you want to spend a lot of time in rivers.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. That's impressive. I'd like, is there a video? There must be video, right?
I don't think there is any video. This was really before, now everybody has a GoPro on their helmet and everything is filmed, but this was really before then.
Yeah.
There's some photos probably floating around online, but it's really, don't look for them.
If you ever find something, send it to me. I love seeing this.
I have one photo of me going over a 30-foot waterfall.
Oh my God.
When I was like 16.
That's amazing.
My parents let me do this.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen it. I've known paddlers, not at your level, but I've known serious ones. That's craziness.
Yeah. And a lot of the people that, this is sad, but a lot of the people that I knew doing this have died. It's.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, like getting caught in the, whatchamacallit?
Different accidents. There's an array of ways they all end up with drowning.
How many people have you known who've died kayaking?
Probably personally 6 or 7.
Holy shit.
My brother knows easily twice that. And he's actually been with many, with like 4 people who've died on the river. So one of my best friends growing up was a guy named Alan Panabaker. And Alan and I grew up paddling together. And then he was my age. My brother's 4 years older than me. Years later, they were both living in the Northeast, in Vermont and New England, and they became really good paddling buddies. And my brother and Alan did a trip in Maine, and Alan died, and my brother had to go, you know, tell his girlfriend, tell his parents. Super intense shit, and it made him like reconsider what he was doing for like, he didn't paddle any class 5 for like 3 months.
That's amazing.
And now he's back at it.
You know, so I too have been attracted to dangerous sports. I didn't know yours was that dangerous.
It was dangerous. Although so what I was good at and what I really loved to do was freestyle. So that's way safer than sort of like creek boating or big water or sort of these extreme river running things. I would go to one location and you do a bunch of tricks and get back in line and do it again.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then, and you went to UNC Asheville?
I went to UNC Asheville.
Your parents were professors, not there, but in a local college nearby.
Yep.
Your dad had a really interesting field to study. What was it again?
So the field is called anthrozoology, and it's essentially the study of human-animal relationships. So he wrote a book that I encourage everybody to buy because it goes directly to my inheritance, called Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat, available at Amazon or your local bookseller. And the book is all about the contradictory ways that people think of animals, you know, like, why is it that it's, we eat cows, but it's taboo to eat dogs, stuff like that. These weird philosophical issues and moral issues about how we treat animals.
And it's just, I made this joke earlier, but like, it's hilarious in a way, because one of your claims to infamy, I suppose, is that you're kind of, for stupid reasons, like you're hated, or a lot of the furry community doesn't like you, right? Because you've said things about, you've made fun of them. So it's kind of hilarious that you're...
I know that we're not allowed to make fun of people anymore, and definitely identities, but come on, furries, it's objectively funny. Furries and other kins. Like, if you're going to identify as a mascot, like, you got to be prepared for people to make fun of you a little bit.
See, this is that moment where I feel like I might be to your left just a step, but maybe not.
You might just be a better person than me.
Or that.
That's also possible. This isn't necessarily political.
You could just suck as a person.
Yeah. I definitely do.
And be one of those people who actually doesn't care about other people.
It's not that I don't want the furries to be harmed or anything physically.
You just laughed at.
Come on. I don't want to laugh in their faces, but like,
just,
I don't like it. Like if
just
I
on
were,
Twitter.
If I were in front of an audience of furries, I probably wouldn't. No, I would totally make fun of
would
them.
Would you?
How could you not?
Let's arrange this.
Yes.
Let's get you on stage. Invite all the furry people.
I'm sure there's a convention in Seattle.
And you can do a little stand-up set.
Yes, yeah, I think that would go
about furries.
Really well.
Be great. Okay, and what did your mom study?
My mom was she taught education, so she taught teachers how to be teachers. Although she hadn't really been a teacher, she taught for a couple years, and then she moved into a higher-paying position where she could tell other people what to do. But both my parents, I would say, they're the kind of university faculty who do not get along with administration. They were always the thorn in the side of whoever was in charge.
Mm.
And I think that my dad especially, he also taught, so he taught in the psychology department at his school, and he taught human sexuality. And he's a really funny guy, and his sort of philosophy of teaching, which I very much appreciate, is that first and foremost, you're an entertainer, because you just like, that's how you keep people's attention. And so when he taught human sexuality, he would do things like bring in a vibrator from the 1920s. You know, he would like, yeah, he like, I walked into his office one time when I was a kid, and there was a giant paper bag on his desk, and written on it said, to the Condom King. And I opened it up and it was just filled with like weird flavored condoms. And it turns out he was throwing them out to his students in class. He's also, both my parents are atheists and incredibly, they don't have any patience or any, they're not precious about religion. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, every once in a while, when my dad was still teaching, they're both retired, I would look up my parents' reviews online. And my favorite student review of my dad was something like, "Pretty good professor. I don't know why he has to be this way about Catholics," or something like that. Just like, they're just, both of my parents are people who, like, I would say don't give a shit about, they're iconoclastic. They just, they're not precious about ideas.
But your dad sounds like, well, I mean, then he would have been called like a sex radical maybe, but he sounds pretty queer, at least in his thinking. Right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. He also sort of walks on his tiptoes. So that's also a little bit queer.
My first girlfriend did that.
Yeah, well, women.
What's that about? Does he have really thick, strong calves?
He does have pretty.
Because she did too.
Yeah, he does.
As a consequence, I always believe, yeah, of walking constantly on her tiptoes, like, you're going to get really strong calves. And she did. Okay, all right. Now the picture's starting to fill in for me. I'm starting to understand who this person is sitting across from me. So when you liked baseball, what age was that?
I was, you know, I probably like 8 league. To 12.
Yeah, little league age. Okay. Yeah. So they weren't freaking out about it. In fact, they were probably even supportive.
My parents?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, so the funny thing, so I have a twin sister. And my sister was also, we were on the same little league team. And we were both the worst players on the team. And so my coach, during practice, he would say, you got to play everybody, right? It's Little League. Like, everybody has to get a chance. Yeah. And so he would say, my sister's name is Betsy, and my coach would say, "Betsy Katie, first base." Both of us. He would send both of us to the same base.
What?
Because he was actually the father of twins.
That's against the rules,
I'm pretty sure. It is against rules. So my sister quit because she didn't like sharing a base with me.
They needed two Herzogs to cover first base.
Yeah, right. And so she quit and she grew up to be a heterosexual. And look at me now.
What?
Short hair. I know.
That's terrible.
I know.
I mean, the disappointment. I could just see it on your face when you said that.
Well,
sorry.
And she married a golfer.
Is that good or bad?
That's bad.
Wait, but lesbians like golfers, I thought. Or no, they are golfers.
That's lesbians are golfers, but
they don't like.
He's not. He's like a sport golfer.
Well, they don't
he's
like
not,
men golfers. Of
right,
course,
right. He's not like
lesbians.
Right, of course. Yeah, yeah, we don't like a man. He's like a. He's not like a Republican golfer. He's like a sport golfer, but still, I'm against golf. I think it's a really terrible use of space. Yeah.
Oh, this goes along with your. This is what we're gonna finish the podcast with. This goes along with your view that all human beings should become extinct, or the human race should become extinct. Is that right?
I don't think it would be the worst thing.
It would not be the worst thing?
It might be the
Speak
best
up,
thing.
Say it loudly so we can hear you.
I am in favor of voluntary human extinction. I'm a member
voluntary.
Of the movement. Voluntary.
That's a very important word.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just think that everybody should volunteer. I think that... So
you like the planet better than us, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Is that really true?
Yes.
We're no longer fucking around.
I'm no longer fucking around. I don't think that...
You prefer the planet Earth to be all alone without us.
It wouldn't be all alone. It wouldn't be the all alone. The planet Earth.
Because you're going to be dead too, right? This is the scenario. So you'd rather that.
Well, the scenario isn't to kill everybody. It's just to. So in my ideal world, all boys would be sterilized on their 10th birthdays, and it would become this sort of rite of passage.
Uh-huh.
So this would happen over the course of the next few generations, and we would spend, all humans would be sterilized, and then all boys would be sterilized. Mm-hmm. And then we would spend.
Wait, why just the boys? Excuse me.
I think it's just easier in terms of.
Okay, fine. Keep going.
And then it would be this, it would be like a real, like, it would be like a quinceañera, but it'd be getting your balls cut. And then after a few generations, you know, humans would stop existing, but we would use that time to prepare the Earth for the end of humanity. So we would, you know, deal with our nuclear waste, tear down dams, sort of like repair everything that we have done. Take all of the money, all of the resources that exist in this world and direct it, target it all towards the end of us. And eventually, some other species will come along and fuck everything up. That's always what happens. Or there'll be a meteor. I mean, humanity is going to end anyway. So why not? Let's do it on our own terms.
Uh-huh. Do you know this guy Gavin McInnes at all?
I am familiar. He's like a shirt designer, right?
You're the left wing lesbian version of Gavin McInnes, I feel. So when I interviewed him, he would say shit like that, except it was, of course, like, you know, about racism and sexism and blah blah blah. And I was like laughing because it's really funny, as you are. And I'm like, how much of this is deeply held, and how much of this is you performing? And I'm going to turn that question to you now, Katie Herzog.
70% is deeply held, and 30%. I don't, okay.
You're not doing a huge favor to the environmentalist movement. I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
So, and this will be public. Just so you know that.
Well, I'm not sure how many of your audience members are probably in the environmentalist movement.
Zero.
So they're not going to tell
on me. We kill them for sport. That's our sport.
Yeah.
Let me modify that. You're like the left-wing progressive version of Gavin McInnes crossed with Thomas Malthus.
Thank you. I mean, I do sort of have Gavin McInnes. I have like the Gavin McInnes / Ellen haircut.
I actually, honest to God, think you guys would get along really well.
Oh my God, you can't say that. That's just gonna like kill me with my massive amounts of fans, my liberal fans. There's one of them.
So we'll get to that in a second. So Katie's hated by everyone, in case people are wondering. No, she's. It's actually really kind of a troubling, disturbing story. But you've had your issues with ostracism around Seattle in particular. But not just that. I mean, sort of internationally among sort of gays and lesbians and queers and whatever, right?
Yeah, and well, the right doesn't like me either. I mean, they like it's funny. I realized recently if I were 25 years old and I told myself like 10 years from now, the left is going to hate you, mm-hmm. and the right is going to like
exactly.
you. I would have thought something went desperately wrong in my mm-hmm. life. That said, when I do things like, talk about what I think about Trump's manufactured immigration crisis, and when I talk about the president, when I talk about how I think that, you know, toddlers should be given IUDs, then the right also doesn't like me when they find out what I actually believe.
No, I know. It's lonely out here. I know.
It is.
It's lonely out here for a pimp. I have the same experience, just differently. But that was a queer statement, wasn't it? Yeah. So, I've heard you describe yourself as three things: progressive, lesbian, and queer. And the progressivism, you covered that quickly, but let's just get this over with. So, you think Bernie was good?
I would have voted for Bernie given the opportunity. I think that Bernie was
you?
A little.
What do you mean,
I mean,
given?
if he had run in the general.
Oh yeah. So you're not a Democrat, you mean? You weren't.
Well,
you weren't
no, I would have. So we have a caucus system here in Seattle. So it's like it's an incredible pain in the ass to take care of or to take part in. Mm. You have to like go on a Saturday and stand there for 3 hours. And I happened to be on a plane during the caucus, so I sent in like a form saying that I like checked my box for Bernie. And I don't know that they actually counted that.
I see. You were just too busy.
I was for
social change.
I was too busy
for
social justice.
Mm-hmm.
Not for social media justice.
No, never. You're always on Twitter.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, I was a fan. I was not a fan of Hillary Clinton. Clearly not a fan of Donald Trump. And so of the three, I think Bernie has some problems. But the thing that I like about Bernie is he was the only politician in my adult life who I've sort of, you know, been aware of, who I don't think was doing this because of his personal ambition. I think he really was actually trying to help the country. And I don't think that's true of Clinton. And I definitely don't think that's true of Trump.
Okay. Do you know my position on Trump?
No.
On this particular question?
No.
Okay. I'm trying to think if I want to modify it. So the position so far has been that he's gay. He's the first. No, sorry. 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 Take that back. Everyone calm down. That he's the first queer president.
Okay. How is Donald Trump
so
queer?
So you see what I just did?
Right.
I'm trying to remember what I said originally. I think I said he was gay. Yeah. But I think, yeah. Yeah. He's still. I think he's a little more gay than queer, but he's in there somewhere.
What is your definition of the word
he's
gay?
He's also the first black president.
Thought that was Bill Clinton.
Do you want to go through that? No, fuck no. He's hell no. He locked up black people. So think about this, right? What do you think people are most upset about with Trump? Taking yourself out of it because you're
policy.
Smart. I'm talking
or,
about like the ordinary dumb person, which
well,
is most
okay.
people.
Okay, well, policy or like personality?
Just tell him. No, no, that's the question. Like, what is it that pisses them off the most?
Him,
the average person.
He's just him.
Mm-hmm. Meaning, just, like, which parts of him? What do you think like really gets to most Seattleites? The average Seattleite.
Okay, the real. I think that he, and this is going to sound insane when I say it. I think he disrespects the office of the presidency.
Oh my.
I know,
God.
And not that
oh,
that
God.
Office
okay,
should
so
have,
really
not that that should
now.
Have, not that the office should have respect, but I think that's what people think. I think that people,
oh.
I think that, like, you're talking about the average person.
Keep scaring
not
me.
We're talking
gotcha.
About the average person. I think that people sort of, he's embarrassing. I think he's embarrassing. He's made us, it's the same way I think Brexit sort of made the UK a laughingstock. I think that he has made us a laughingstock.
Yeah, so he has crazy wild hair that's colored.
Right.
He's wears crazy suits that don't really fit his weird body that he's unashamed of.
I know we're not supposed to body shame, but his body is weird.
But he throws it around sort of without any shame,
mm-hmm.
which drives people nuts, I bet, partly. He loves to show off how rich he is. He can't
yeah.
stop talking about like...
He likes to show off how much richer he is than he actually is.
Yeah, sure. So everything's literally covered in gold.
Right.
Right? So start thinking about who else this might apply to historically, right? So like he's bourgeois humility and modesty, not his thing.
Not really.
Right? It's kind of the opposite, right? So let's see what else. Sexually, his sexuality. He's the first sexual president.
Oh, you don't think Bill? Well, what about Kennedy?
Well, I mean, meaning that the first one, I guess he hasn't. No, he has. I mean, he's the first president who's ever mentioned anything about his own sexuality one way or the other.
Well, Clinton certainly himself. Talked about it, but he was forced to.
Yeah, but even then he didn't, because he said what?
He said the, how it depends on is, your, yeah, right.
He didn't
right,
say anything
right,
about
right,
his own sexuality.
Right.
The Obamas, as far as I know, have never had sex except to procreate two children.
Oh, right? They have hot sex, for sure. But he just would never talk about it.
That's my point, yeah. Right? They have what I call the great bourgeois silence on lock, mm-hmm. right? But they all have. Mm-hmm. It's not just because they were the black ones and they had to be extra pure.
Right.
All the Bushes, the Clintons, the right. Carters and Reagans, they were all like that.
Right.
One small exception that no one knows about, Barbara Bush was a little bit of a nasty.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She was into the.
Well, she was also a big drinker, right?
I think she did the whole thing. If she weren't the president's wife, she would have been a badass.
Wait, I just said Barbara Bush was a big drinker. I think that might not be. I think I'm thinking of Nancy Reagan.
Who went to? No,
rehab?
You're thinking of Betsy Ford.
Oh, Betty Ford. Betty Ford.
Wait, what's her name?
It was Betty.
Betty.
Yeah,
Betty.
It's the Ford.
Betty Ford was a total badass.
Right.
Actually, I had a student at Barnard who wrote her senior thesis on Betty Ford.
Really?
And like, I was like, oh, now I know. Yeah, it was the only person who has ever been in the White House who I have anything good to say about at all.
What about I don't know if this is true, but I read on a poster one time that Eleanor Roosevelt's lover was Amelia Earhart.
Oh, yeah, no.
I saw it on a poster.
No. No.
It must
and Eleanor
be true.
Roosevelt was just the worst person ever, but that we'll get to that
later. I mean, if she had an affair with Amelia Earhart, then I'd give her points
Amelia
for that.
Amelia Earhart was like, how old was she when she died? She was like in her 20s. That can't
right.
be right.
Hot. She picked her up on
an
airplane.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be hot. I went to grad school with Eleanor's great-granddaughter, and they used her body for Eleanor's statue in Riverside Park. So I know some Roosevelts. It's very strange knowing Roosevelts and Kennedys.
Yeah.
When you go to Columbia, that's kind of who's around, you know?
Does the money last?
I assumed so because
they're at Columbia.
They didn't seem to care too much and lived in nice places and had no visible means of support. Okay. We haven't even gotten. Did you climb trees? Baseball? What else?
Yeah. I was back to my gender dysphoria.
Which town was this? It was outside of Asheville.
Right. I grew up in a small town called Cullowhee, North Carolina.
Spell it.
Cullowhee.
My goodness.
It's a Cherokee name. I think it means Valley of the Lilies or
Cullowhee,
something like that.
Okay.
That's what they say. Oh, you know. Okay. This is what my hometown is. Okay. Did you ever see Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri?
No, but heard about it.
It was filmed in my hometown.
Oh.
So it was actually filmed at the bigger town next door to my hometown, but that's where I grew up, was in a rural sort of redneck, very white.
But it sounds like your family was kind of like the outdoors family, the outdoors
right.
sports family.
My parents were not
family.
Natives. My parents were carpetbaggers who moved from the north.
Also not surprising.
Yeah, they did the back to the land thing in the 70s.
Okay.
And ended up living in sort of rural North Carolina, where they still do.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So we sort of had that common too. My parents were countercultural lefties and stuff. Okay, so, but I mean, I don't want to pigeonhole you, of course, but you know, this thing about, this is an important story here, I think, because it does illustrate a lot of what you've been doing recently. Like, you had what now is called gender dysphoria or tomboyism, or you're saying now, actually the better term is
gender nonconforming.
Because you were doing the things that girls were not supposed
to do. Right, so dysphoria is like, according to the DSM, dysphoria is a discomfort
with
your
term.
Right. So it's a discomfort with your natal sex. Mm-hmm. So I think by a lot of people, like if I were born, you know, in the year 2000 and not the year 1983, I probably would have been one of these kids who is, you know, sort of, now there are gender clinics. I don't think, my parents are smart, and they're also, my dad taught in the psych department. I think that they're like much more sort of aware of these things than they're not neophytes when it comes to these sort of social issues. So I don't know that my parents in particular would have like shipped me off to a gender clinic, but a lot of parents, like good liberal parents, do that if their kids.
Yeah. So I wasn't fully aware of these gender clinics. Can you just talk about that for a second?
I mean, they're just sort of therapy places people go to for therapy or to get hormones or hormone blockers. There's a couple in Seattle.
It's a fairly new phenomenon, though,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Well,
it's
I don't know that it's fairly new. I mean, there is a center that's now shuttered, that was shuttered on the after some activists, some trans activists, went through a concerted campaign to shut this place down in Toronto called Center for Addiction and Medicine or Medical Health, something like that. It's a fascinating story. I recommend everybody who's interested in this stuff read Jesse Singel's article on Ken Zucker. So those are your search terms. And so this was a clinic that had existed for, I think, at least like 20 or 30 years. But it used to be that people who would go to gender clinics or go to therapists or psychiatrists because they were having gender dysphoria, it used to be generally like older trans women and adult trans women. Mm-hmm. So natal males who wanted to transition to female. And now what you see is young natal girls.
Like how young?
Some of the the most preeminent therapists, counselors, psychiatrists in this field talk about seeing toddlers. A woman in San Francisco, her name's Diane Eintraft, I believe. She's talked about, you know, you can, like, if a little girl toddler refuses to wear pink, she is potentially signaling that she's actually a boy. So there is, like, there are people in the world who will say, because my child wants to wear a tutu, my boy wants to wear a tutu, he's signaling to me that he's actually a girl. So that's sort of the status now. But when I was a kid, I got really lucky when it comes to parents. And so my parents didn't make a big deal out of the fact that I looked like a boy. Mm-hmm. I was allowed to dress myself. I was allowed to have short hair always. I had a twin sister who was the opposite. So they didn't pigeonhole me in any sense. That said, if I grew up now, I think that people would sort of look at me differently and look at me as gender dysphoric as opposed to a tomboy.
Right.
So it would medicalize this thing that I think is probably a normal human variation. So there's been a lot of research on gender dysphoric kids, and the number is up for debate, but most of the research says that around 80% of kids who present with gender dysphoria will end up desisting, which means going back to their natal sex. Around 80% will decide that they're not actually trans. Mm-hmm. And most of them grew up to be gay and lesbian. Mm-hmm. I don't think this would surprise anybody who's like been aware of, you know, this doesn't surprise people in the world.
Right. Who actually have been around people like that.
You mean, right.
Like you.
Right.
People like you.
Right. Nobody was surprised that I grew up to be a lesbian.
So you're saying that your trajectory is actually the standard trajectory for people who are gender dysphoric as children.
It would have been until recently.
Oh, right.
And so now you can change your sex or change your gender, and that's something that
you're saying that 80%.
Oh, right. Well, that's what all of the studies say, and a lot of trans activists will debate the statistics. But if you look at the 30 years of studies about this, they all say the same thing, which is most children desist.
Okay, so a lot of people don't know what's been going on with you and your career. So just so people are aware, like there's trans people are fucking furious at you. A lot of people are.
A lot of trans people, but there's also,
just for pointing this out.
Right. There's also a lot of trans people who like me, and it's interesting. So,
oh yeah?
Yeah. Okay. They tend to be transsexuals though. So there's a difference between transsexual and transgender. Mm-hmm. And transsexuals tend to be a little bit old, like more old school. And they have a different perspective on these things because it used to be, until recently, if you wanted to get hormone therapy or surgery or whatever, you had to live, there were these gatekeepers, right? These healthcare provider gatekeepers. So you had to live as your desired gender for 2 years. And this could be really onerous for people, of course. Now, what most therapists use is what's called the informed consent model. So you just go and you say, like, I'm aware that there could be some complications, and they give you your drugs or your blockers or your surgery or whatever. There's just, the barriers are way lower now. So this has changed radically over the past couple of decades.
Okay. So, but your position on this stuff is what, about trans people and trans identities?
So my position, broadly speaking, and this is what gets me into trouble, I think that there's a very small percentage of the population that is genuinely gender dysphoric, and that there is and that transitioning helps relieve their dysphoria. And I think those people should be supported. I think they should have healthcare. They're human beings. If this is the thing that helps you and you're an adult, go for it. But I also think that there's another population of trans people people who identify as trans or non-binary, who are not gender dysphoric, and that this is all a part of a social contagion. This is, it's, yes, this is why people don't like me. This is actually, the New York Times yesterday had a...
Do you use that terminology? Social contagion?
Well, the term, so the term is rabid, yes.
Is it similar to a hysteria?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Or a trend. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school, every girl was a cutter. You know, nobody mm-hmm. like spontaneously came up with this idea of cutting on their own. And this was before everybody was on Tumblr. So now what happens is teens, and there's a high correlation between, transgenderism and autism.
Oh.
Right. So what you have is, and this is all like a lot of people in the trans community would absolutely disagree with everything that I'm saying. Mm. But so what you have is a population of natal teen girls who get on Tumblr, they find, or YouTube or whatever, they watch these videos of people, sort of these progressive videos of people, and I mean progressive in terms of like starting your transition, going through your...
Okay.
And, and people have these great outcomes. For a while, a lot of them do. And then so you see, like, I could change my life. Mm-hmm. I could take this thing and isn't that appealing?
Right.
You know, you could change everything in your life. Mm-hmm. But there are consequences to that. Mm-hmm. For instance, what if you change your mind later? And so anyway, so I wrote a story for The Stranger, as you know, last year, or in 2017, about detransition. And I profiled a number of people who had lived their lives as trans people for anywhere between a couple of years to 20 years. And then they ultimately decided that living as the opposite gender, being trans, wasn't helping them. So I interviewed, for instance, two people who were born male, lived as women for a while, and then are now male again. Both of them had bottom surgery. So now they're men without penises. I interviewed women who no longer have breasts, but who have facial hair and deep voices, and who are infertile. So there are these consequences,
and they're not happy about it.
Well, I mean, you know, I think there's, with any life experience, there are varying degrees of happiness and unhappiness. Some wish that they'd never gone through it, and others say, like, this is part of my life, and this is who I am,
and it's necessary. Maybe.
And it's necessary. Yeah. This is just part of their journey.
Right.
But these people exist, and mm-hmm. So I wrote about this, and there was a huge outcry, not just in Seattle, sort of everywhere, and people burned stacks of the paper and sent me video of it. It was intense. There were flyers in my neighborhood in Seattle calling me transphobic. I lost like real life friends, not just internet people dragging me, but real life friends. A lot of my relationships were strained because of this. And the piece was not, it wasn't an opinion piece. I do a lot of opinion writing, but this was like deeply reported. It was probably one of the drier things that I've written in some ways. And it caused a huge shitstorm, and it really changed my life in a lot of ways. I think ultimately for the better, but it was very difficult for a while.
Yeah. With this neighborhood we're in, the crosswalks are the rainbow flag.
I hate those fucking crosswalks.
Rainbow crosswalks in this neighborhood. This is like the gayest, probably. I was just thinking, Seattle's now San Francisco. Like, it's become San Francisco. San Francisco is no longer San Francisco.
Right. I mean, there's
still the Castro, but it's, I feel like Seattle now is the gayest city now.
I think Portland might be gayer.
I don't know. Well, this neighborhood is the gayest neighborhood.
This is historically the gayborhood, but it's also gotten really expensive. And of course, like, as this always happens, like, gay people are pushed out into the black neighborhoods. They push the black people out into the suburbs.
Sure.
It's, you know, the cycle of gentrification.
Right. But as I was like rolling up here today, you know, and crossing over those rainbow sidewalks, I'm thinking about you and your experience in this. And you live sort of near here, maybe?
I live in the black neighborhood. I lived in Capitol Hill and I have been pushed down to the black neighborhood,
but
where I am gentrifying down there.
But you're here. You're like going to the cafes for lunch. You work here. You come here every day or often, right? This is kind of your world. And just, I was just thinking, imagining that, like, because I've been ostracized, but never at that level.
Yeah.
So I know I have a taste of that,
yeah.
But I've never at that level where it's like you feel like the whole neighborhood or a whole town or a whole city or more broadly, like this community that you were part of. I mean, that was for your whole life, right?
Yeah.
Tossing you out and worse than that.
Well, so Seattle is sort of the perfect place to live in if you've been socially ostracized, because people here are, it's an incredibly... what's the word? It's a really passive aggressive city. And so people I've never had somebody come up to my face and call me a TERF or anything like that. What they do is ignore me. So people I know ignore me, which is weird. Like, people I've dated, that's weird, when I've like run into people that I like actually spent a lot of time with will ignore me, which is strange.
Just for people who don't know, TERF, trans exclusionary radical feminist.
Which is a term that's considered a slur by the people who it's directed towards, usually.
Just so people know, there's a large wing of kind of the feminist or radical feminist movement that believes that trans women are not, in fact, women, that because they have never had the experience of being a woman until they transitioned, and therefore they shouldn't be taken seriously or legitimately as women, right?
Right. And I don't consider myself a TERF. I barely consider myself a feminist at this point. And I'm definitely not a radical feminist. I disagree with radical feminism on many, many other issues. Yeah. But I do have some, you know, we overlap in a few ways.
Well, you just live as a feminist.
Right, I mean. Right. My problem with feminism, and this is, I have a couple problems with feminism right now. For one, I think feminism has become sort of meaningless at this point. Like, it's a slogan on a t-shirt. It's this sort of capitalist feminism. That's Beyonce feminism, mm-hmm. which is less about empowerment and equality. And I mean, it's sort of empowerment in sort of the like.
Or it's simply a vehicle for a grievance.
Right. Right? Yes. Yes.
Whatever your grievance is, right. That's a vehicle. Whether you're mad at your boyfriend or you're mad at Donald Trump or something in between, it can be the patriarchy doing it.
Right. 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 And I do think that the patriarchy exists. I'm just not sure it exists in the United States. It exists in Pakistan.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Right? Okay. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And exists in Saudi Arabia.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, there's patriarchal subcultures and even the dominant culture. There's a patriarchal element to it because we have hundreds of years of history in which men ran shit. Okay?
But it's talked about as though it's a conspiracy.
That's the thing.
That's what I struggle
with. That's
the
thing. Have you checked out men's rights? Have you checked out MRAs at all?
I watched that documentary about
my experience with them too. Yeah. And let's share notes on this. I'm really curious what you think about this. So here's my reading of that movie, The Red Pill, about the MRAs. I was blown away. I knew nothing about them. I thought it was going to be what the feminists had been telling me. Basically, it was a bunch of like angry men in their basements shouting about wanting to rape women. I thought their critiques and analysis were amazing and blew me away. And I still feel shame about this. Like, never putting together. Like, this is something that like is so Thaddeus Russell, and I just didn't see it because it was just right in front of me. The fact that only men get drafted for wars.
Oh, yeah.
That only men get sent into coal mines. That only men get sent up into trees to cut them down. That only men do deep sea fishing and all the most dangerous things, the hardest things, the worst things.
Right. But there's a reason that men do these things, because men are stronger than women.
Well, no, but it's worse than that. So that I was just stunned by, and I think that's just in the most incredible set of insights I've ever come across, really, in some ways. On the other hand, I also think they're either deliberately naive or dumb or have a blind spot, or they're just annoying in refusing to see that neither was that a conspiracy against men.
It's not a conspiracy. It's just not.
Not everyone, but generally speaking, people agreed to divide the labor by gender in these particular
and
ways.
It's not even an agreement. It's just sort of like, these are how things work, because these are, I mean, I think at heart there are some, you know, there are some intrinsic biological differences between men and women. And this is sort of where I disagree with feminists
and with me.
And you don't think there are differences between men and women?
I'm basically a social constructionist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, yeah. But I mean, we can talk about exactly what that means. But yeah, I am at least skeptical of any claim about biological essence.
Well, what about in terms of just mass? And I think I think you're to the left of me on this. Probably.
Yeah. So I spent about 30 minutes talking to Joe Rogan about this. Mm-hmm.
I think I know Joe's perspective on this.
Yeah, I know. He thought I was just insane. Well, it was an infamous conversation that's gotten me lots of attention. But yeah, sure. I mean, what I've said to like my students for 25 years about this is like, okay, so take all 8 billion people in the world in your mind, line them up against a wall and take their clothes off and then look at them in your mind's eye, right? And how many genders and sex? Sorry, forget gender. How many sexes are there?
I would say 2. I would say two with, I will want to acknowledge that intersex people exist. So let's say 3.
Okay, so how do you know there's only 2? What are you basing that on? What do you see?
Genitalia.
On those bodies.
Physical appearance.
So it's genitalia defines it.
Well, no, I think it's chromosomes that actually define it. I mean, I know that there are exceptions to this, but the idea that, you know, this is something I see on Twitter all the time, just because some people are born with one leg doesn't mean that humans aren't bipedal.
Right. So this is just a question of typology or taxonomy. Right.
Right.
So once we label something, it doesn't mean that's its essence, its natural essence.
I agree with that.
That's all. So the fact that you have a vagina and that I have a penis means then what, though?
I prefer to call it my front hole.
Ah.
This is actually, do you know about this? This is a
no.
term that
oh, oh,
this
I
is
do.
A term that trans men, some trans men use for their vagina.
I do. that's when it just starts to lose me.
Yeah.
I get locked. It becomes just plain gross.
It
frankly.
Does sound
for me, and
like,
maybe I'm. Ooh, maybe that was like the only time I'm off brand here, guys. I'm sorry, but yeah, I don't. There is like that, like relentless clinical description of stuff and like inventions of new terms like that. That are, I don't know. I don't see the need. Why can't we just do what we want to do? Wear a dress.
Right. No, like, I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you on this.
It's this obsession. It's like it's
identity.
So Wendy Brown, this is a digression. You may know her, Judith Butler's partner.
Uh-huh.
Wrote this great book. I think she's terrible in a lot of ways, but she wrote this great book called States of Injury, and she has this argument in it, and she coins a phrase called wounded attachment that I think is just a phenomenally helpful concept, which is for a lot of people in what are now called the grievance industries, mm-hmm. or fields. What they're really seeking is something that's fundamentally not just conservative, but reactionary. What they want is for me, straight white cis men, to do something differently about our, you know, to think differently. That what matters the most, apparently, according to the way we're treated by them, is us. That the people with the power.
So you're the most important thing.
We're the most important thing.
Let's just center everything around you. Yeah.
So it's all about changing us, and our thoughts are what we must all talk about, and we must hunt down the wrong thoughts and replace them with the good thoughts. But it's all about straight white guys being the most important thing still.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Even when you are on the bottom of the totem pole in our sort of current inverted oppression Olympics, where straight white men are the trashiest of the trash, it's still all centered around you.
Yeah. So Brown's critique goes even deeper. I mean, she says this in the book, that it's essentially, you know, you're sort of recreating your father.
Ah.
So you're making.
Is she a Freudian?
Yes, in part. Yeah. So it's partly that. So it's like that's all they're doing. They just want a better dad.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's horrifically conservative and actually anti-feminist.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of feminism is sort of anti-feminist. Like, for instance, like one of my during Me Too movement, I started reading some Susan Brown Miller, who wrote, I don't remember what her seminal text is, but she's the one who sort of put forth this idea that sex isn't about rape, it's about power. And then so I started looking at the research and talking to people who actually work with sex offenders. And when you ask them why they rape people, they don't say it's about power. Mm. They say it's about sex. So that's where sort of I disagree with feminists, is I think some of this stuff is just not based in reality. Because like, you don't rape people like just because you want to like show them that you're the boss. You do it because you want to have a fucking orgasm.
Yeah.
It's about, I mean, I think there is some element about power too, but this idea that rape or sexual assault isn't about sex, I think, is so divorced from reality that, like, why do people continue to push this narrative?
Yeah.
And you see it all the time. Like, look at Vox. It's all about this, like, these power dynamics. Everything is about power. The same idea that, people of color can't be racist or can't be racist against white people because of the power dynamics. Well, I think it's more localized than that. I mean, there are some situations in which white people don't have all the power,
mm-hmm.
like in a room full of black people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or at Harvard.
Sorry,
at Harvard in a job search.
Right.
I've been told this twice, that I didn't get the job because I was white.
Yeah.
Or a man. And there's both in one case, but yeah.
But you have so many other privileges.
I do.
You can see yourself on television.
That's true.
In the White House.
That's true.
I'd rather have the job at Harvard, but
I would rather have none of them.
But
No. I wanted to get back to this thing that really, I think I got an insight into you, or maybe a different way of thinking about your career and what you've been up to for a few years here. It's like these academics are out there coming up with these ideas that actually put people in boxes.
Oh, for sure.
But they're presented as just the opposite. So, for instance, Susan Brown Miller and that whole feminist generation saying that rape is about power and violence against women. It's not about sexual desire. You know, I bought that.
Right.
I bought that until just about
it's in
20
a
minutes
book.
Ago.
Why wouldn't you buy it? You know, I mean, it's in a book. Academics say it. Therefore,
right.
But anything with like studies in the title, I think that we have to question thoroughly.
So here's this weird thing with you, though, which I kind of love. And I'm just kind of figuring this out right now as we're speaking. And I was thinking about it on the drive up here from Oregon. It's like, so they do that. So they say rape was why, but actually it's X.
Right.
And what you're, and then you come along, you're like, oh, really? Let's test it.
Right. I mean, that's the thing.
And they're like, oh, it turns out there's a whole bunch of people who just, I don't know, guys, just say for them it was desire and not about power and not about wanting to kill and hurt. It was about just wanting to fuck a woman.
Well, I mean, even like, yes. So even when you talk to some feminists about you know, a lot of feminists think that all sex work or in pornography, like, criminalize the hell out of sex work. You know, this is
those
necessarily
would be, those would be SWERFs, sex SWERFs, worker, yes, exclusionary, right, radical feminists.
Right. Yeah. But they also I think you know, victimize sex workers, so they might not necessarily include them. They look at them as victims anyway. So a lot of feminists, sort of contemporary feminists, not sex positive feminists, will say, you know, sex work is inherently exploitative because men are only there because the only reason men visit sex workers is to exact this power on them. Mm-hmm. If you ask men why they go to sex workers, it's because of companionship and sex, and sometimes they just like want some human touch. Like, they actually want a human connection, and they're not getting it in these other ways, and so they go visit sex workers. I don't see anything wrong with that. Yeah. I don't think that you should exploit women or traffic them, obviously. But that's where I digress from feminists, is I just think that some of the ideology is just not based in empirical evidence.
Right.
There's no evidence to support it.
Yeah, regular listeners to the show will be very, very comfortable with what you just said, because we've had tons of sex workers on here who've made that argument and are radical and but yeah, no, it's really
you
important.
Mean they're all victims. Well, and then a lot of these, so a lot of it's funny there's these certain places where radical feminists intersect with conservative Christians.
Exactly.
And it comes in the trans issue, it comes there, and it also comes down during sex work and when it comes to sex work.
Yeah, so how do the rad femmes coalesce with conservatives on trans people?
Okay, so this is a you know, these are small groups of people, but there's some radical feminists, a number of radical feminists, who, for instance, are in favor of bathroom bills. So bills that would require, the state would mandate which toilet you can use. I'm against this, and for many reasons. For one, I just don't think that the government should be telling us what fucking bathrooms to use.
Cool. We like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So radical feminists, you know, they want to maintain sex-segregated spaces. And I don't actually think there's anything wrong with having some sex. Like, if you want to have your, like, you know, your yoga class for just people of color, I don't have a problem with that. Whatever. I don't care. That said, you know, when you want to have your whites only golf club, it's a little bit different. But I think it's interesting when we like actually, I don't know, it's interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah.
So, but some radical feminists want to maintain these sex segregated spaces. And there are some, you know, they have some good arguments. Like, for instance, there have been a couple of cases of trans women in prisons. There was a famous one in the UK. Trans woman in a prison who then assaults a female inmate. Not that female inmates can't assault each other, but they're probably less likely to rape each other. But these are isolated cases. Most trans people are not committing, you know, assaults. But some radical feminists, you know, sort of take these small cases and use them to argue against being able, like, you know, bathrooms or whatever. Bathroom integration, I guess we could call it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then on the other side, on the right, you have these conservative, evangelical, whatever Christians who just think that this is a, you know, an assault on the body that God made. So, and they're also probably tend to be homophobic. So you do have they're sort of, and there are groups, actually there are groups where you have conservative Christians and radical feminists working together. There's been some lawsuits filed that are have been orchestrated by vastly, you know, really conservative groups, and their allies in this are actually radical feminists. I assume that they just don't talk about abortion and gay rights and all the stuff they disagree on, but they actually manage to put down their differences and work for this cause.
So do you know the history of that coalition? I mean, that coalition's been around for about 40 years, the Christian Radical Feminist Coalition.
Oh, no, I don't know about this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so it began in earnest in the late 70s with what are now called the pornography wars of the 70s and early 80s. So you must know about this, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that was when Andrea Dworkin and,
right.
and Catherine McKinnon were actually drafting legislation with Jerry Falwell's organization to ban pornography from cities. And so Minneapolis or somewhere in Minnesota actually had an ordinance that was written by them, by that coalition of feminists and Christian conservatives, to ban pornography from some part of the city.
You know, so this is also happening right now. So at Notre Dame and some other schools, some male students have advocated for a ban on pornography on campus. But they're doing this because they're, you know, they're really Catholic. They think that porn is, you know, Jesus Christ when you watch porn or whatever. I don't know how Jesus feels when you just jerk off without porn, but he doesn't like it when you look at it. And so they're advocating for banning porn from their campuses, but they're doing it under the Me Too, the cloak of Me Too. So they're saying, like, this is inherently exploitative. So people, so progressives sign on and say, yes, this is feminist. Yep. But really, it's just the same puritanical bullshit.
At Notre Dame.
At Notre Dame.
I think Notre Dame's Catholic.
Last time I checked, yes. Yes. And but this is also happening. It's happening at Penn, Princeton, a couple. This is, you know, it starts and then it spreads.
That's interesting. So this is another reason I love talking to you, because you know exactly what's going on right now and you're, like, full of all this information that I don't know about. So I've been wondering when the next attack on porn would come around. I've sort of been wondering why it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, it's happening. It's happening.
But it hasn't until recently. Right. It's been sort of weird, right? Because there's been, like, this incredible puritanical stuff on other issues, right? And it's like the feminists have been going hog wild on men's sexuality for several years now in all kinds of other ways. But they've left that alone. And I was like, guys, that used to be your whole thing. Did you give up on that because it's impossible
now? Well, now, I mean, you can sort of, nobody wants to be, like, sex negative. So I think that that's probably a cultural issue.
Is there now a stigma? We finally made it into a stigma.
I think, I would think of, like, woke women, living in Brooklyn would all probably call themselves sex positive. They're all poly. They're all, like, this is, like, I think they're what personally used to be called just dating, but they attach a label to it.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's an identity.
Right, like, you went from tomboy to gender dysphoric, and they went from dating to
poly.
Poly.
Yeah.
So, all right, man, you come at me fast. I'm trying to think if there's, where were we? There was, back to your childhood.
Yes. Actually, do you mind if I need to use the bathroom?
Let's do that.
Okay, do you want more water?
Pause, I do, yeah, hang on a second. Everyone knows, I think, the world, and especially Americans, is overworked. And today, it can be very hard to find the time to sit down and learn more about the world. It's not easy when the likes of social media can be so addictive and time-consuming also. So you may think you don't have the time to read a whole book or to develop yourself. In fact, I often don't read a whole book. I usually just use it for my work. There's an app I highly recommend. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, the kind I use, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes so you can read or listen to them easily. Blinkist is made of people like you and me, very busy people with active work schedules, who want to get the main points of the books very quickly without reading the entire book. With an audio feature, Blinkist makes it so easy to finish 4 books a day while you're on the go. 8 million people right now are using Blinkist, and it has a massive and growing library, from self-help to business to health to even history books. I like Blinkist personally because, as I said, for my own work, I use books rather than read them entirely. So in less than 15 minutes, I feel like I can get from a book exactly what I need. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for the unregistered audience. Go to Blinkist.com/renegade to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/renegade to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/renegade. Let's get back to your lesbian past.
Yes. And future, hopefully.
No, I was curious that you were into, I'm really curious about which parts of being a boy you were attracted to, right? Like,
yeah.
And then I want to compare notes, because I also was attracted to some parts and not to other parts.
Okay, so, you know, I think that for a while when people started talking about gender dysphoria, when I started becoming familiar with this term, I thought, like, yeah, I had that, you know, I had this, like, deep discomfort with, like, being a girl. I wanted to be a boy. Now, however, given some reflection, I think that I was less uncomfortable with my physical body, which is the definition of dysphoria, and more uncomfortable with the thing, with my role as a girl. So I had an older brother, as I mentioned, who was cooler than me. He was 4 years older. He was a skateboarder. I wanted to hang out with him and his friends. I wanted to wear his, I did wear his clothes. I wanted to skateboard. So I just liked boys' stuff. And so I did think that I peed standing up for a long time, and I thought that I would eventually grow a penis if I did this. Mm. I also thought that my grandparents' dachshund was my uncle, and that my dad played banjo in the Rolling Stones. So it was a very stupid child.
How long did you pee standing up?
I don't know. It wasn't something that I did every time.
How do you do that? Like, you straddle the toilet? Or go outside? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm still pretty good at it. Not as good. I don't have as much practice now. But if I need to stand up.
I was just thinking, I mean, I've seen it done outside, but I'm thinking like with a toilet, you straddle it, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. You just sort of lean your pelvis forward and your back battle.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of rock on your back heels a little bit. Huh. You might spray the toilet a few times.
But. And you thought that from doing that repeatedly over many years, you would eventually grow a penis from it.
Yeah. And I did. So I did have one thing that is typical of children with dysphoria is immense discomfort around puberty. And I did have that. Mm. But then again, I think a lot of kids, you know, I don't think that's necessarily.
Well, but I would think it would be especially hard for someone with that.
Like getting my period was super, I think trauma is overused, but I really fucking hated it. I didn't tell anybody. And I just like discomfort with the whole thing.
Of course. Well, you're going in the wrong direction, goddammit.
Right, right. Yeah. I was really upset when I turned 13 at sort of all of the growing up, the womanhood stuff was very uncomfortable for me. But now I'm really glad that I'm a woman. I am very glad that I didn't grow up 15 years later.
Not the period part.
Well, I actually don't get a period anymore. I'm going to tell your listen. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be TMI about it. So I'm a lesbian with an IUD because IUDs take your period away.
Oh, yeah.
So I just discovered that this year. So after like 20 years of like,
right.
of having like immense discomfort, now I've rid my body of it, which
is birth control pills too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. But I'd never been on birth control before. No need.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, good. So you're free of that too.
I am free of that. That's right. I didn't. So I am on hormones to get rid of my period. They're just not testosterone.
So you don't. Right. So you are happy with your body. I mean, it's fundamental.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm happy with the fundamental structure. I mean, like
the genitalia and all
right.
that.
I'm a 35-year-old woman who could be more fit, but yeah, for sure.
Right.
I mean, I don't like, I know a lot of women. This is something that what I'm going to tell you is something that is a new phenomenon. So there are a lot of women who are considered themselves cis, so they don't call themselves trans, but are butch. So I would like fall under the butch category, mm-hmm. I think, maybe soft butch, mm-hmm. who are getting top surgery. Mm-hmm. So this is super common now mm-hmm. for people who don't necessarily identify as trans, but are having double mastectomies. It's really common.
I've heard you quote some numbers that were pretty shocking just in your own life.
Right. I would say, I know dozens, like maybe over 50, between like 50 and 75 people who've.
50 to 75 people, women.
Who've had, yeah. And I'm not, and this is, I'm including trans people in this category too, but just in terms of people who are not cis.
Right.
Who, that number is smaller, but it's significant. I don't think that you see this if you're not involved in queer communities because it's super fucking common. And the thing that's strange about this to me is that nobody's talking about it.
So common among people known as lesbians, right?
The people formerly known as dykes.
Who identify as lesbians.
They would not call themselves lesbians. They would probably call
butch dykes previously or whatever.
Queer. Nobody calls.
Now they're queer, but previously butch dykes.
People who would have
about.
Come out as like teens as lesbians who now consider themselves queer, maybe gender queer, but are not on hormones, not doing anything like that, but just go and get double mastectomies. And like a lot of people that I really love, a lot of my close friends have done this. I'm supportive of them. Mm-hmm. I'll send them a care package, but I also wonder why nobody's talking about it.
What are your feelings about it? I've known a few people who've done that, at least that I'm aware of. Yeah,
lesbians
who did it.
Yeah. My feelings about it are.
But they didn't. Like, your point is they didn't. It wasn't part of it. They're not trans people. They just wanted to get rid of their breasts.
They want to take their tops off.
Yeah.
And here's
still,
my feeling
about it. But
still
were women to them.
Right. But here's my feeling about it.
Yeah.
If you want to take your top off, take your top off. You know, like in Seattle, nudity is actually legal in Seattle. So you can go down to the lake and take your top off.
Sorry, you meant taking your shirt
off. Taking your shirt off. You want the freedom to take your shirt off.
Right.
My feeling about that is instead of changing your body, we should change society. And I feel like it's very regressive to put yourself through. If you want it, if you have like great big massive tits and they're causing you pain, like do whatever you want with your body. I'm not the body police. But I think that there's a real lack of conversation about why we're doing this, why all of these women are cutting off their breasts. Like, just imagine that, you know, you're not a queer person and you land in this world and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, like every third woman has had cancer. What's going on? Like, why do all of these people no longer have breasts?
So, okay. So I love that argument that you're making. And I'm also but let's stick with the phenomenon for a second and let's unpack this. Like, what's going on here? What do you think's going on with them? Like, why are they doing it?
I think it's a social contagion. I think it's something that their friends are doing, and so they're doing it because it looks cool, people are happy with the results, and I think that's why they're doing it.
It's that shallow?
They might not think so. I probably wouldn't say this on a queer podcast.
Right, yeah, you wouldn't.
No.
You wouldn't say this on Savage Love?
I would not say this on Savage Love.
On Dan Savage's show, yeah.
No, Dan wouldn't ask me to
in
say
this. In this show,
Dan knows better.
In this room,
Dan knows better than to bring this up because he knows what I would probably say about it. Yeah, I think there's an element of social contagion. I think probably, you know, everybody's different. I think for some people there's probably a deep discomfort with their bodies, and for other people, I think there's an element of social contagion. Like for instance, I had a friend who recently had top surgery, and I asked her why, and she said, "I wanted to look like a rectangle." And I just didn't know how to respond to that. Mm. That to me seems like, okay, you need to explore what's going on. Surgery to me seems like the last step, yeah. Not the first step.
Well, is it really different than just any other hatred of one's body?
No, it's not. Right. But we don't congratulate people for getting nose jobs, yeah, or tit jobs. Like,
exactly,
like,
yeah,
here's what I want to do. I want to have a Kickstarter. So all these people do, you know, you do a GoFundMe too, because maybe your insurance will cover it for it, mm-hmm, but you got to be out of work for a couple weeks, so you do a GoFundMe. I want to do a GoFundMe, and I'm going to say it's for top surgery, and then I'm going to get implants.
They're going to lynch you, Kate.
They're
going to
lynch
it.
Me. I don't think you can use that term, but they're going to hang me. So, but that's my point, is like, I could have some other problem with, I could hate my nose. I could, you know, I could need gastric bypass surgery, mm-hmm, but we don't call people heroes for getting nose jobs,
sure,
and we don't call it a part of your identity.
Sure.
It's a part of your style.
Sure. I'm with you, but there's a bigger, I think, way more important and really, I think, liberatory argument you're making here, which is that sounds to me like you're saying that people who do that are essentially letting the culture win.
Yes, I am saying that.
Over their bodies.
Yes, and I think that
they're surrendering their bodies to this fucked up culture that we live in.
Yes, it's regressive. Oh. It is actually regressive. So this is why non-binary identity, I've spoken and written about non-binary identities, and it's not popular when I talk about it. But so non-binary identities are people who like say they are neither male or female, right? But a lot of it comes down to, like, you know, what your style is. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I just feel like, you know, if you're a woman who is butch or a man who is femme, isn't it more progressive? Isn't it more liberatory to just do your thing and not change the word for it?
Yeah.
Like, isn't it more radical just to be a man in a dress?
Okay.
I think that's fucking radical.
You just you just did something that this show is in part about. You just made me think differently about something I've been thinking about for a long, long time.
Good.
I've been doing this longer than you have. Yeah. I've been thinking about this stuff a lot longer than you have.
Yeah.
And I never thought of that argument, and I love that.
It's just, it, I mean,
it's so perfect.
I love it. To me, like, this should be about liberation. This should be, I think, like, a lot of the stuff that a lot of these socially constructed, you know, gender roles are bullshit. But I don't think that this sort of new queer ideology does anything to free us from gender roles. I think it does the opposite. It makes them intractable.
If you hate your body, right? I mean, that's...
change the fucking world.
And
man,
why do we hate our bodies in particular ways?
Why do we hate our bodies?
We're very aware of it when women, right, talk about being too fat, and I want to look like a straight line, or I want to look like a bone or something. Usually it's something non-sexual, but I want to be skinny. I want to radically change. They say it all the time, and we know why, right? We all have the theory, oh, it's because the culture tells them, the billboards and the advertisements and the chicks in the bikinis all tell them to look that way.
Right.
And I think that's probably generally right. And then when they do these radical, horrible diets to make themselves look like that chick in the bikini, we're all kind of sad, but kind of,
and we definitely
congratulate them, and right, we kind of don't like it.
We don't donate to their GoFundMes.
But we also think it's sad a little bit, right?
Right.
To hate your body, don't we, people?
I mean,
that's what you're saying. That's what the trans people who do what they do to their bodies are doing, I guess, is
right,
what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't use the word.
I wouldn't either.
Right.
And I take that back, and I mean that, because it's just a choice, and I'm not putting any value on it, but you're saying that it could be the case, very much so, that they are simply surrendering to what the culture is telling
them. Yeah, and I want to make clear that I don't think this is true for everybody. I think that, trans people have existed forever.
Sure.
I think that there is a small percentage of the population that is genuinely suffers from dysphoria.
Yeah.
But something else is going on here, and, you know, it's hard to talk about in the United
States.
It's
hard to deny that it's not trendy right now.
It's, well, read the New York Times, Jenny Boylan had the Times regular trans columnist in the op-ed section had a piece in the Times yesterday arguing that this phenomenon, social contagion, is not real. Mm-hmm. There are studies showing that it's real, mm-hmm, but it does, and, you know, and I understand why trans people are resistant to this. It's a lot of, you know, if a lot of the same rhetoric was used to sort of weaponize against gay people in the 70s, 80s. But I think there is a difference between sexual orientation and gender identity. We're all sort of lumped in the same category, but there are some differences there.
And I guess victimhood is really what's going on here at the base of it. It's just the same. It's the politics of victimhood applied to this particular subcategory of people, right?
Which is super powerful right now.
Do you think that's what's going on? I mean, that's kind of the energy that's driving this thing. It's like you get to become the special victim if you are a trans person.
Right. Yeah.
And you get all these privileges.
You know, I think victim might not even be the right word. It's just specialness.
Yeah, it's just
being different.
Yeah.
You know, but in the end, we're all not that different. Everybody's the same.
Or we're all different.
Yeah.
To me, there's 8 million. To me, there isn't a right answer to how many sexes or genders there are. That's my position. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a perfectly reasonable, intelligent argument to be made that there are two, mm-hmm. and that there are an intelligent argument that there are three, and an intelligent, perfectly reasonable argument that there are 8 million.
I will concede that gender can be endless. Like, I have no problem calling trans women women or anything like that. But when it comes to male female, I feel like I would say whatever biology.
But like, think about you and me
right
now. Like, how we look, no one can see us, but like, and how we behave and sit and dress.
But what's that have to do with sex?
So, you know, you think I have a penis.
I don't know.
You've told me maybe you have a vagina, but I don't know for sure.
No.
Right?
No.
But you have, as you've said, pass often for a man, and you've been called a boy or a man many times, and I've been called all kinds of things, you know, fag, pussy, this, that, or the other. And we shop in the same departments, right? You wear men's clothes.
Yes. Well, I wear little boys' clothes because I actually don't fit into men's clothes. But I shop in the, yes.
Right.
But that's why people think that I'm a man, because of the clothes that I wear and the haircut that I have. I don't wear makeup, but I could, you know, if I wore different clothes, nobody would think that I was a male.
I know. And you were into baseball, and I was too. That was my thing. That's all I did. Played mm-hmm. baseball. I'm obsessed about it. My entire childhood. Waste of time, by the way. I think you chose a terrible sport. And I thought your taste in boyhood was lacking, but mm-hmm. you know, you could have picked basketball. I wish I had.
I also played basketball, but I was horrible at that too.
You were a better boy than I was.
With the girls.
Oh.
I played basketball with the girls. Yeah. I played baseball with the boys. And the reason I would have played softball, but my hands were too. This is one thing that I think is bullshit. Softball, those big fucking balls. I can't get my hands around those. Like, why not let girls play baseball? Why not fast pitch? Why do girls have to play? Like, all right, you remember that girl? I can't remember her name, but the girl who, she pitched the first, like, Little League World Series, pitched the first no-hitter in the Little League World Series or whatever a few years ago. Mm-hmm. She's now a college softball player.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's anything wrong with softball, but, like, why can't she play baseball?
That's not what you or probably she wanted to do, ultimately.
But then again, you know, now she's an adult, and I don't know how her skills match up against post, you know, pubescent.
Can we get back to how we're exactly the same?
Sure.
You and me? Okay. So, no, I don't mean that.
Well, all white people are exactly the same. So.
Right, true. We all have the same privilege. No, you know, I mean, so my point is that I think you and I are much more alike than I am with a lot of other men. I know we are. I mean, I know we are. Interests, looks, you know, we could be related. You could easily be like my little sister or brother,
yeah,
or whatever.
We both have that sort of Irish looking. Yeah.
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 And we identify with a bunch, you know, same interests. Like, and I have lesbian friends, like, at my boxing gym, you know, and that's like, we're buddies. And I'm like, tight, and like, call her dude, and she calls me dude, and we hit each other. And it's like a total.
So you misgender her, is what you're saying?
No, because that's what she wants. Right. Yeah, I know.
Oh, no, you can't. No, you can't want that. It's misgendering.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
kidding
yeah.
about
yeah,
this.
No, you're, yeah, yeah,
but
no.
I do get shit on for calling people dude.
Seattle sucks. Now.
Oh, it's
God.
It's really bad.
It's worse than Portland. It's
really bad.
I mean, especially in this neighborhood. Yeah. Every time I come here, it's like, oh my God.
Well, it's also the internet, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, but like, okay. So I've never seen your vagina, and you've never seen my penis, and you probably never will. And so then, why then are you a female and I'm a male? I don't get it. You know what I mean? If we're like so alike in all these ways that are obvious and visible and material.
Right.
And in terms of personality too.
Well, I mean, we just have different chromosomes. And I'm not saying that we should do a DNA test to figure out what our chromosomes are, but like there is a difference between males and females. I mean, the thing is, like, here's where this argument sort of gets ridiculous to me, because would you agree that we're animals?
We are classified as such, yes.
We are mammals.
Classified as such, yeah. It's a category that's been created
and applied to particular bodies. So why would it be just humans? So all other mammals, right, fall into this binary. So why would humans be any different? I firmly believe that humans are animals. I think we're fucking animals. And some people fuck animals, but we're just animals. And so why are we any different than any, like there are some species of reptiles that parthenogenic species and fish that actually do change sex midlife, but mammals don't do that. And we're not any different than any of the other, like, why would there just be this one species of mammal?
Okay. Well, then you're making more of a queer argument, which is that, you know, all these categories are meaningless.
I don't think categories are meaningless.
Or less meaningful.
They're words.
That's my point.
We make with our mouths.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So, like, chromosomes didn't exist, 100 years ago?
No, they existed. We just didn't know
about them. Well, so that's the thing, though. That's what I'm getting at, right? So, like, they looked through a microscope and saw this thing in these bodies and said, that's a chromosome, and the people with the penises have the two of the things and the, you know, whatever it is. So it's naming and identifying. It's imposing, right, categories on bodies.
Yes.
And so again, it's like, well, we can just change our mind about that, couldn't we, science? And we could just have different categories. No, I'm saying, why couldn't man or male be exactly what you are?
Well, it could be if you just change the word.
That's what I'm saying. So male could be a person with curly red hair who's five, whatever,
but
you
that's
six.
Not, but and, that's not what male means. I mean, male means...
So far.
Right. I mean, obviously, like, language, we can change the words, but that doesn't mean that that doesn't change the fact that they're... these two different things that exist that are necessary for reproduction until we start making babies out of, like, I don't know, like fertilized pumpkins or whatever.
Yeah. So if you want, right. So if you want to predict, and this was actually literally a debate I had with this creep, I'm just going to say it, Stefan Molyneux, about this. And he was like, well, can an oak tree have a baby?
He seems like he would be impossible to debate because he speaks utter nonsense.
Well, whatever. Anyway, but you know, that's, it can go down that road. And it's sort of like, it depends on what you define, how you define all those terms. What's a tree? What's a baby? Right? What's sex? What are these things? And once we define the rules of the game, right? Once you tell me that in our game, known as mathematics, 1 + 1 = 2, from then on, I'll be like, okay, when I'm playing the mathematics game, that's what I believe. Right?
Sure.
When you play Monopoly, it's like when you get $200 and you pass go. Is that real in real life? No, it's a fucking game, but we're just in this moment, we're agreeing to that.
Right.
Right? It's suspension of disbelief.
Right.
Same thing.
Right.
That's what it is to me. So it's like, I would just ask you, like, how do you define male and man or female and woman? And then I would immediately do what Foucault does, which is just simply start asking the history. Right. Asking is, I think, the way to put it, actually. Asking the history of this thing, right?
I'm so glad I'm not your student. This sounds so difficult to do.
I know. That's why you're here
to
help.
I'm sure they learn a lot.
Well, wait, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that Foucault, I think that as soon as you mention the word Foucault, I would, my eyes would start to automatically
Well, that's just anti-intellectual.
Into my head.
I am
anti-intellectual. I'm actually not an intellectual and certainly not an academic. I don't speak academic. I was raised by academics, but I don't speak it.
How are you not an intellectual?
I don't identify as an intellectual.
Well, that is some bullshit. Yeah, well, exactly.
Okay,
you don't have the chromosomes. Yeah. That's why.
I don't have the chromosomes as an intellectual. I wouldn't say that.
No,
I,
it's that you don't have the dick, right? Only men
can be. Well, I do have the dick. It's just in a drawer at my house.
Ooh. That was, you know, so I was going to say. So what if, right. And then I was going to add, like, what if you penetrate your girlfriend with a dildo
there's
every
still
night?
No,
you know what I mean?
There's still no man involved in that process. I mean, that's the thing. Like,
I'm just trying to adopt you, and you're not letting me. But there's
this other thing happening in queer circles right now, specifically around the trans debate. It's called, you know about the cotton ceiling, I'm sure.
No.
Okay, so the cotton ceiling is the term that it, let's see. Okay, so it's the glass ceiling. Let's say the glass ceiling is the if you talk about, like, the presidency is the last bastion of frontier that women need to break through.
Right.
The cotton ceiling, the last frontier that trans people need to break through is sex, is dating. So cotton, I think, refers to underwear. It's sort of a strange term. Uh-huh. Anyway, so there's now, what you see now is this rhetoric in trans circles and some feminist circles, some just like progressive circles, saying if you are a lesbian and you don't have sex with trans women, you are transphobic because some trans women are lesbians. And some penises can be female penises. And so for years of queer people, of lesbians and gays, trying to argue that their orientation is unchangeable, we're born this way, which I actually have some, I'm not totally sure I believe. Okay. I think for some people it's true, I think for others it's not true. That now you're a bigot if you don't have sex with this opposite sex organ, because that opposite sex organ is actually a same-sex organ because they say it's a same-sex organ. And this is something that you never see in gay circles. Nobody is ever arguing that gay men need to sleep with pussy because pussy can be male. That's actually probably some people argue it. But it's all over, like queer trans Twitter. It's all over the place. Right. If you don't sleep with penises, you're a bigot.
Hey, that's right. You think my students have a hard time and are exhausted? I mean, that just sounds like nothing but work. That life, to live like that, to think like that. It's just nothing but constant.
And it doesn't, if you like, you know, this is all, these are arguments that happen in these like radical, like very progressive online communities. If you talk to somebody in Michigan or where, some like normie, and you say like, you know, can penises be female? They're just going to look at you like you're fucking crazy.
Yeah, I know.
It's so anodyne. This idea that like lesbians shouldn't be expected to sleep with penises is incredibly anodyne. And yet we act like it's somehow like hugely problematic.
But Katie Herzog, so I fear that you're on the verge of throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. And it's, I think, so... your freedom that you have now, like your parents were a big part of that, obviously, but the idea you needed that queer intervention into the world. You needed the trans queer intervention into the world of saying, my body is not my destiny.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
You needed that. That was the idea, the argument that launched the trans movement.
Or it's
that made it possible.
Or it's my gender is not my destiny. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'll concede that. Yeah, sure.
My vagina does not determine that, you know, what sports I play.
Right, but that's only if you believe that there is something inherently, you know, male about baseball, which I don't think that there is.
Again, right.
That's culture.
That's right. Right. So that's totally queer. I agree with you.
Right.
Again, so to live in a free society that you want to live in, sounds like, I mean, we need that argument. You have to defend that argument, that basic argument that launched the trans movement. Now,
sure.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
That the particular ways in which the trans movement have used or weaponized that argument is terrible in all sorts of ways. And one of the ways in which I think it's terrible is that they do the exact opposite of what they should be doing, which is saying, I am X gender or I am Y. This is new. They invent genders, but it's all about creating these new categories and insisting that everybody police those categories and insisting that we respect those categories, and they're just becoming the new cops.
Totally.
So you and I completely agree on that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Bunch of trans cops out there, basically.
I mean, and it's not just trans people. It's
sure.
And there are so many trans people who are like, have common sense and who are not on this side.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever read Alice Drager's book, like Galileo's Middle Finger?
Pieces, and I know her work, yeah.
Yeah, so if any listeners, like if you want to find out about sort of about how trans activism has affected people's lives and also sort of policy and history in amazing ways, read Galileo's Middle Finger. It's an incredible book for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. I don't remember why I started talking about that.
Well, I know you're really influenced by her.
You talk
about her a lot.
Alice, she sent me her book after my detransition piece came out, and it was so helpful to read.
Why?
Well, part of it was just I felt really alone. And it's this, and her book is this history of other people who've like found themselves on the outs of their own community. Mm-hmm. People mostly in academia, not just people who work in sort of the sexology space, although a lot of the stories are about researchers specifically in sort of trans universe. So that was part of it, and just, you know, having someone being able to talk to someone who really understood what I was going through was very helpful. And there's a lot of people who've gone through what I went through, and we find each other on the internet, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, I mean, many people have said she should be a guest on this show, and I definitely am interested. I need to read that book more carefully. I didn't know it was that good, but I've heard really good things about it.
Yeah. It's very good, yeah.
It sounds good to me.
Yeah, and there's other stories that in the piece, so just these like stories of sociologists who have been, or psychologists or whatever, who've just been railroaded out of their universities for having inconvenient but true research.
Yeah, well, that's basically me, more or less. So, okay. It's this interesting thing where you were headed down the road of a trans person, but you decided at some point you just didn't. Like, you were hoping you were going to grow a penis. You were, you know, I'm saying according to the current narrative about trans people, right? And then you just didn't. You just went in this other direction where nope, I'm going to keep everything on my body and I'm just going to be a something else.
Right. But it wasn't, I think that makes it seem like there was more of a choice. I mean, I met a trans person for the first time when I was 18. So this was in 2000. And I remember like very, a trans woman. I worked at a rafting company and there was this trans woman who worked on the bike shop, or trans man who worked on the bike shop. And I remember being super shocked by this. So this is, you know, earlier than, this is 20 years ago. Mm. And it was really rare. So it wasn't like I had, you know, I know there are trans people my age who knew from a really young age, like, you know, were sure that they were the wrong sex. They were born in the wrong body. And that wasn't entirely me. I think for me, really what it came down to is I didn't like the boxes that society put girls in. And I grew up in a family that didn't require me to jump into those boxes. But I don't think that, I don't think I'm like trans at heart. I think I'm a lesbian.
Yeah. But you found that out sort of later. Like,
yeah.
As a girl, you thought you might have been. It wasn't, you didn't use that word, but sounds like you, if you were that girl now, you would totally have been part of the trans movement,
for
probably.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
For sure.
So that's a good, right? Yeah. So you've been born 20 years later.
Yeah. No, I definitely. I think for sure. But I also, when I was younger, like I have a bunch of really stupid tattoos. I was like just more prone to groupthink when I was younger, as all younger people are, which is why I'm glad that I'm, you know, not 18 right now.
You have, I think, my favorite tattoo of all time.
Because
it's completely nonsensical and just funny, unless there is something else going on there. On your forearm, you have the word brunch.
Yeah, yeah.
Tattooed.
It was a friend tattoo. I used to get brunch with a group of women, and I'm not really friends with any of them anymore. All of my tattoos almost are friend tattoos of people I'm no longer friends with. So my point is, young people make stupid fucking decisions. Like,
what's the brunch about?
I would go to brunch every week with my friends, with like a group of like five women, and we
That's
went
meaningful.
And got. It was. I just wish I were like still friends with the people.
I see.
With the tattoos.
Right, you have the tattoo, but not the friends.
Right. Not that we're not friends. We're just like, you know, people move apart.
Is the tattoo a little sad then?
I think it's I don't even fucking go to brunch anymore. I think it's the worst meal. I don't want to go stand in line for eggs. I can make those.
But every time you like brush your teeth or do anything, you look at the word.
I don't pay attention to it. It's like a birthmark.
I tattoo see you kids, I swear.
It's stupid.
Okay, good.
I think that tattoo, right.
This is my other old man on the front lawn moment.
I'm with you on this. I think tattoos are incredibly dumb. I think that it's all about, it's this sort of narcissism, this like, this desire to be different, to advertise
but
how
that's
different
good.
You are.
God damn it. You're different.
It's narcissistic. I think there's something about not standing out that's very cool. Not the desire to not be looked at, to not make a, I say this as somebody with a platform who like makes my life shouting at the world, but
exactly.
But well, not with my appearance anymore. I just, yeah. I find subtlety much more appealing now than I did when I was younger.
Yeah, see, I come from the wing of this politics, I guess, that like is the drag queens, like that's my thing, like I've written histories of them, and I just that's my politics, and you know, well, actually your boss was very much a part of this, the whole fight between that older generation, the trannies, mm-hmm. versus,
oh, you can't say that,
I know, yeah. Dan was
quote,
the one,
yeah.
He was like the front line of that, and so like I, you know, I'm buddies with the people who make RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. I don't know RuPaul, but I love him. So I'm sort of around that crew. And like, that's how I've always, I just think that's the best politics. They're just like, fuck it. I don't care what you call me. Just pay me, bitch. You know,
yeah.
It's like that whole attitude.
Yeah. Old queers are fucking cool.
The best.
And young queers are fucking annoying.
They suck.
Yeah.
I think I just thank
and
you.
And they don't have any, and like, this is such a like get off my lawn thing to say, but they have no fucking respect. Like, I think that young queers really don't understand that an entire generation of gay men died. It's like, they don't get it. God, they don't get it.
Thank you for saying that. Shit.
And man. then they like piss over, you know, over old gay men for using the wrong language or whatever. All their fucking friends died. Come on, like, have some, like, patience with that.
The 90s were hard, even if you weren't gay. To witness that.
We, like, okay, so at the podcast that I'm on, Blabbermouth, today we were talking about the Kevin Hart. We recorded today. We were talking about the Kevin Hart and Ellen situation. And so, you know, Kevin Hart made these bad tweets, homophobic mm-hmm. tweets 10 years ago. And so last night when I was getting ready for the podcast, I was just, like, looking up some statistics. Like, what year did Barack Obama evolve on gay marriage? 2010. Mm-hmm. What year did California, the citizens of California vote to ban gay marriage? 2008. Like, shit was incredibly different 10 years ago. Yeah. All over the country, states were passing amendments, constitutional amendments to ban gay marriage. Shit was different.
Amazing, right?
That joke that Kevin Hart made about that's whatever right. homophobic shit would not have made anybody bat an eye.
That's right.
But we are applying our...
It didn't.
It didn't. No, that's right. It didn't.
He was a superstar and he said it then and no one noticed.
Nobody gave a shit.
And now it's like the World War III.
Yes.
That's exactly a great point. It's an awesome point.
I mean, I think that young people really don't understand just how different things were not very long ago.
It was a fucking Holocaust, AIDS.
Yeah.
It's straight up a Holocaust. And it needs to be talked about that way. I mean, I think it needs to be acknowledged as such because it's just as a fact. I mean, the number of people who died. And then on top of that, who they were and what they were doing for the rest of us in terms of making our world better.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that whole generation of gay men.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's the saddest thing ever in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Pretty much. That I've been around sort of directly, right? I mean, I've never been in a war. Right. I mean, I've never been... But that is just, it's so underappreciated, even as you're saying, by young gays and queers.
I mean, I think the big reason that it's underappreciated is because, you know, is actually for a good reason, which is HIV is not a killer anymore.
Exactly.
You know, you can take your pill and not get it.
And I'm so happy that kids now don't think about that.
Right.
Gay kids don't have to think
about
that.
But you know what? They also don't think about the other STDs they're going to get because they're not using condoms because they're all on PrEP, which is something that Dan has been talking about for years. And
back that up because a lot of listeners are not in that world. So
okay, so PrEP is a I'm not sure what it stands for, but it's a drug you take every day that prevents the spread of HIV. So if you take PrEP, you can have sex with an HIV positive person without a condom.
I thought you meant
poppers.
Poppers are uppers. So poppers with PrEP is really the way to go.
I did poppers for the first time at a fucking work Christmas party like 2 weeks ago. It was so strange.
You didn't like it?
I did not like it.
Ooh.
I didn't expect it to be to like really fuck me up. It was just like being incredibly drunk for 45 seconds in my like editor's kitchen.
Huh. I've never done poppers.
But I also didn't need to loosen my butthole at that moment. So I don't think I was really in the right situation for it. Anyway, so PrEP
She's
is different.
Talking about buttholes.
So PrEP is the drug that you take so that you don't get HIV.
It's like
It's a prophylactic.
HIV. Yeah, right.
This is
also underappreciated how massive a transformation that is
huge.
In itself.
But because of PrEP, men have stopped using condoms, and so rates of syphilis are up, rates of gonorrhea, rates of antibiotic resistant STDs are up. So there are consequences to everything, including this great thing. There are going to be consequences.
Yeah,
and Dan predicted this, and people shit all over him, of course. Not that gonorrhea is as bad as HIV.
Again, it's sort of weird. Like I once had a debate with a lesbian at Barnard College in front of a room of probably 60 only women. I was the only man and the only straight person in the room, and I made the argument against gay marriage from the queer perspective against her. So I'm in that position right now of feeling like to the left of like queers and gays on these issues of sexuality. He's just objectively within that world, you know, true. Of course, it's right.
Yes.
Of course, right. But like.
But you can't say it.
No. So the question is, what are the politics though, and like, what do we want to say about that?
Right. I think what you want to say about it is like, if you don't want there to be epidemics of gonorrhea, then you still need to wear a condom.
Well, how about so again, for me, that's a little too much other oriented. You're worried more about like society and other people. I would just say what I do say to people is, if you don't want to get HIV, if you don't want to get gonorrhea, if you don't want to, then wear a fucking condom, take the pill, whatever it is. And if you don't, fine. I mean, I'd prefer that you not give it to me or give it to someone I care about, but just know. And that's your choice.
Right. I mean, you can take a course of antibiotics and get rid of the clap or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not that big a deal. But the problem is that viruses evolve.
Sure.
And so like in King County where we are now, there has been these outbreaks of antibacterial, what's the word?
Antibacterial. antibiotic,
resistant. It's antibiotic resistant.
Resistant strains of something or other.
Okay, which can be a very big problem because then it can really damage your body.
No, but we also are for for sexual freedom and the celebration of pleasure, are we not?
Oh, for sure.
Thank you.
For sure.
So that's it. So that's the really tricky thing, and I appreciate that Dan and you are and the stranger generally kind of like right on that razor's edge. It's tough, right?
Yeah.
But like.
But you can't deny, just because we can be sex positive doesn't mean you should deny reality.
Yeah. Well, sure. Right. Exactly. I mean, I would certainly never say to someone, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. Go ahead and fuck anybody with whatever you want. I mean, it's all fine. And just be, go be free, you know?
Right.
I mean, my friend Connor Habib, who I'm sure you know, mm-hmm. you know, like, I would imagine that's what he would say, it seems like. And he's as sex radical as anybody out there. So that's fine. It's just that it then can become, so look, the whole fucking gay marriage, gay conservatism movement that you and I think we have more or less the same take on, not Dan Savage, but like as being basically conservative.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
You know, that's, you know how that started, right? It was with, what's his face? The playwright, famous, super famous, Larry, Jesus, who founded the whole thing.
Kudlow?
Kramer. Larry Kramer.
Kramer.
Right? That's
his
name. Yes. Giving a speech at Cooper Union saying, we've got to stop fucking in the bushes. That was the big line. That was like in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then Andrew Sullivan came along with it. We've got to shut down the bathhouses. We've got to stop fucking in the parks. We've got to stop fucking. We've got to get married. We've got to have children.
But why not just use condoms?
So I'm just saying it began
right.
for the handful of people who are still sex radical people. We know that it's all that crackdown began with these claims about health
right.
and bad right. things happening from free sexuality.
Right. So, well, there's just, I mean, there are consequences to free sexuality. That's just like, you live with them or you don't.
And as you know better than anybody, these fucking people are all Puritans now.
Yes,
these
they
gays
are all Puritans.
Who used to be our heroes right. for the libertines in the world, like now they're the ones often policing the
yes.
stuff, right?
They police your behavior, your thoughts, yeah. your words, who you sleep with.
So, but I'm just putting in a little plug for you to maybe think more, or maybe, I don't know, I just want you to be more for fucking sexual freedom, that's all.
I think that people should fuck whoever they want, except
yes.
for my girlfriend.
Right.
I think there should be great mass sexual freedom for everybody except for the person I'm in a monogamous relationship with.
That's exactly how I am. Yeah, that's what I think too.
Yeah.
Okay, now, total change of course, and maybe we'll have a real fight. So you write a whole bunch about this stuff, trans issues, sexuality. That's like one of your beats in a way. And then another thing you do, which is not even with The Stranger, is you have this, it's a web series, right? With PBS?
Oh, right. I always forget about that.
Yeah, it's so unlike everything else you do.
Right, it's a gig.
It's
yeah.
very funny. But if you Google you, it's half you doing this and half you doing that.
Yeah, I don't think they like the other thing that I do. So, So I host a television show that is aired on the local PBS station. The show is called Reinventors. And it's about, what's it about? It's about like in people working in technology or whatever spaces to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. So it's a very public radio.
Well,
like,
be more specific.
Or public television.
Make the world a better place in particular ways, right?
In environmental ways, like mostly climate change. So
renewable energy.
Renewable energy is a big part of it. So this is, to be completely frank, this is not something that I am passionate about. This is a gig that I work.
I thought it was.
No, they just asked me to do
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, not the
really
gig
well.
Itself, but climate change. You are.
Oh, no, I'm concerned about climate change, which I'm curious to talk to you about this. So before I started The Stranger for a couple years, I worked for a advocacy journalism outlet called Grist. And Grist is all about climate change. Mm-hmm. Like that's what they write about, which I found incredibly boring to write about. So I didn't like writing about climate change. I do now because I don't have to every day, so I can write about it when I feel like it. But I do believe in climate change, and I am incredibly concerned about
As
it.
Does
I
your
think
boss.
It is the yeah, I think it is the I think it's the biggest issue facing our species.
Okay.
And all of the residual effects from it. So I'm very curious to hear your perspective on it.
Okay. So as I was driving up here, it took 3.5 hours, so it was a long time. I was thinking a lot about this, you know, this moment right now. Mm-hmm. And I feel differently about it now than I did when I was driving up here, but I thought I was going to be very nervous to tell you something. I'm a little nervous.
I mean, I think I can tell what you're
going
to tell me.
Well, I don't know. So the point is that I was actually nervous simply to tell you that I am only, and this is it, only skeptical.
Okay.
About all that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Cool.
I think you should be skeptical of everything.
Yeah.
So I haven't yet to see any compelling argument against the existence of climate change. So give me the best that you've got.
No, not skeptical of that.
Yeah.
Like I'm not 100% sure of anything, but I mean, if I were in a science classroom, I think that I would say that it looks to me, the evidence is pretty overwhelming that there is climate change going on and has been for a while, and that it is almost certainly, in my view, human created.
Okay, so where do we disagree?
Okay, cool. So that's fine. And like that goes for, I think, everybody who identifies as a climate skeptic, and that's how I identify.
Yeah.
Not a denier, right?
Okay, yeah.
Huge difference, right? Between us.
I don't think deniers identify as deniers. I don't think anybody self-identifies as a denier.
No, but there are people who are straight-up deniers who say, like...
But there's one in the fucking White House.
Yeah, maybe, I guess,
I mean, he literally said that climate change is a Chinese hoax.
Sure, yeah.
Denial.
That's denial, yeah. Yeah, but I meant just, like, what's really going on in his head, who knows? But, yeah, so I'm not that.
Right.
Like, I've seen the data, I've seen the hockey stick, blah, blah, blah. I don't see how that could be completely fabricated.
Right.
I mean, I think there's something going on. And I think it's more or less what people are saying. So we agree, like on the history, put it that way. However, I am really curious. Can you answer this question? This is totally off, maybe off topic, but like, how are they so sure they know what the temperature was 10 million years ago?
I think that,
I mean, I know how they do it, but like
geological records.
I know, but like, are we sure that's that accurate? Do they get it to the exact temperature degree?
Like, I don't know, but I just don't know enough about the science to answer that question.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. Like that alone, right? They're saying, oh, I mean, they're 10 million years ago, they have a number with a temperature, you know, a temperature and a number versus, how do you know that precisely?
I mean, I assume that, like, unless we're talking about the studies fields, the grievance studies fields, if something has the word science after it, for the most part, I'm going to believe the experts. Not always, by any means.
I know, so come on, like, gays and lesbians, they are the ones who told us to not trust the scientists, right?
When it comes to
anything, because they're the ones who put you all in fucking the closet.
Well, I think there's a difference between social science and
scientists put you in the closet.
But like social scientists, psychologists.
It was a whole cabal for 100 years saying, you know, about race, about sex, about gender.
Right.
They're the ones who built the goddamn closet for all kinds of people.
Right, but it wasn't geologists.
No. But geologists can be employed for any political purpose,
for sure.
As they are literally. In fact, most geologists, you know what most geologists do for a living.
Yeah, they work for the oil companies.
Yeah. So anyway, trusting science.
But the oil, but Exxon scientists were some of the first people to connect, you know.
I know, and then they kept it secret.
And Exxon squashed it
for smart reasons.
Years.
I mean, business reasons. Right. Yeah, I get it. But so, no, it's about predicting the future.
Okay, yeah.
Basically. I mean, I am skeptical even about this whole thing about knowing for sure that we've had a hockey stick, because I really don't know how you know what the temperature was when the mastodons were roaming the Earth. But anyway.
The hockey stick isn't about the temperature as much as it is about the parts per million, the parts of carbon
or
in the
CO2.
Air.
I know, but again, like, how do you know for sure it's like exactly that many parts in 10 million BC?
Yeah.
I just don't know. But anyway.
I think that's fair.
Okay, cool. Then... But more of my skepticism is about future predictions, right? And that's where I'm very, very skeptical about a lot of it for two reasons. And one is standard stuff that you've probably heard, which is just that, well, there's a lot of debate, actually. There's no debate. It is true that it's happened. There is all kinds of debate about all the rest of it, right? Like exactly what will happen with climate change, exactly what it will mean, what it will do to us, will we be underwater or not, right? Will it be a catastrophe or will it be an inconvenience or somewhere in between? And there's debate among climate scientists about that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's number one. Number two, and this is the thing that people don't talk about. I think I'm the only one who ever has. When I hear not so much the scientists, but the activists.
Oh, yeah. No, the activists are full of shit.
But some of them are scientists, too.
Yeah, some are. Yeah.
So, but I mean, the activists, the political people, right? When I hear them talk, since I come from an old socialist family and I've been around socialists and lefties my entire life, it sounds exactly like what communists have been saying for about 150 years, which is that the end of the world is coming.
I feel you on
and
that.
And capitalism is to blame.
No, I completely feel
it's
you
exactly
on that.
Exactly the same. And Naomi Klein is useful for me because she's pretty much admitted this, that it was a convenient truth for her to have climate change, right? Because, and she has basically said this many times, because it made the socialist project viable once again.
I'm not sure that the socialist project is all that viable, actually, but maybe in Canada. But no, I see, we don't actually disagree on this. I mean, I worked in advocacy journalism, you know, the word journalism, I'm using that in quotes. Like, and I will say, like, Grist actually did some really good work. There's a reporter there named Nathaniel Johnson who's on the Food Beat, and he wrote about GMOs. You know, the people who read Grist don't want to hear that GMOs aren't going to fucking give you cancer and that there's nothing wrong with them. But we reported the truth in this case, right?
Oh,
but no, I'm not an activist. I don't trust activists because everything can get captured. You know, you have to, if you're around too many people who agree with you, the natural endpoint of that is just your views become extreme. You know, and I think activists have good reason to have their own personal motives for being in this space. A lot of them are genuinely held, and some of them are just like, just what you do. I'm an activist. I fight for this thing. You know, I'm still concerned about climate change. I feel like, you know, it's interesting. They say that weather isn't climate. However, just from my own, to use an SJW word, lived experience, the weather is fucking different. You know, I mean, and I don't think a lot of that, as much as Trump is an idiot about when he said, like, you should go rake the forest or whatever, there are other things going on in terms of wildland management, why we've had these crazy wildfires in California and in the Pacific Northwest. That said, human beings do not care for the planet. We just don't. You know, there's too many of us.
Most don't.
Most don't.
Yeah.
We have our nice national parks, which are now being overrun because there's nobody to maintain them, thanks to Trump's shutdown. Mm-hmm. But we're just not a species that has done a very good job of caring for this one place where we live. In fact, our brightest minds are now talking about leaving this perfectly good planet to go to a terrible planet. I don't fucking know why they don't use their resources to fix the beautiful blue planet that we're on instead of sending us to fucking Mars. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not a billionaire. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't have much of a disagreement there. I don't think that you can trust activists.
Okay, so I mean, even what you just said there, and neither one of us is a scientist,
no.
So we don't want to have this argument because it's just, I can say that there's all this data and arguments that the planet's actually healthier than people, whatever, but it will go on forever and neither of us really know. So.
Right. I do think that people should be concerned about water.
Yeah. So that's actually where I was going with this.
Yeah.
I'm actually more interested in why you care so much, and the obvious to me answer is the rivers.
Well, that's part of it, but also the other part of it is that I like to take showers and drink water.
Yeah,
I mean, like, we have depleted groundwater. Like, California's Central Valley has depleted the groundwater so much that the ground is literally sinking.
Oh, yeah.
These are humans can't survive without water for very
long.
And
the pictures of Beijing, I'm pretty sure, are not doctored. You know,
right.
I agree, of
right.
course. Like,
right.
And Pittsburgh looked the same way 100 years ago.
I mean, and, you know, and I will
but
fully admit
that. But did you hear what
I just said? Right.
Okay.
100 years ago.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is, like, we have done the EPA, not currently, but in the past, under some different presidents, the EPA has actually done some good work, you know, in terms of, like, cleaning up air and water. We are cleaner in a lot of ways than we were 30 years ago.
Okay.
But we're still depleting resources at this level that's just not sustainable.
Okay.
Which is why I'm not having children, and because I don't want to, because they're annoying.
Right. Oh, I love this. As I heard you say once, I have no maternal instinct at all.
I don't.
I like
puppies, but I wouldn't want one.
You're so unnatural. Are you sure you don't have a dick? Are you positive?
I do have one. It's in my drawer.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot. Yeah. God bless you, Jenna. back to climate change. I think, yeah, this is the only conversation that I've ever had that's gone from dildos to climate change. That quickly.
Everything comes down to dicks.
You know what I mean? Like, God.
Male privilege.
I mean,
that's
what
it
we go
is.
From,
always comes back to dicks.
I was trying to keep it on the science and the dicks come in. It's just, you won't stop.
I work at The Stranger. It's just like dicks just come up every day.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the great things about working on this place is that, you know, all the new rules about what you can say at work, and maybe they're good rules for a reason or whatever. Mm. They don't really apply here.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean, it's not, whatever, you're not going to, like, harass your coworkers or whatever, but the conversations that we have with Dan Savage runs a podcast out about sex in this room every day. Like, there isn't this sort of preciousness about sex here.
Right. Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, and everybody's queer in some way or another, right?
In some way, yeah.
Yeah. No, I wanted to get at, I wanted to talk to you about a word and a concept, which is tolerance.
Okay. I'm in favor of it.
Yeah. So in a way, like, your career has become, or you've come to represent, you hang out with the Heterodox Academy, you kind of hang out with the fringes of the intellectual dark web. They kind of
like
you
like,
a little bit.
I mean,
like,
I tweet with them.
I know, I know. Yeah. They like you a little bit. Like, they play with you a little bit. You know, you're kind of friendly a little bit. But their thing is, meaning Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, the Weinsteins, all that, their thing has been free speech. We have been shut down. We are not allowed jobs. We're not allowed to say things. It's a terrible authoritarian climate we're in. We need freedom, freedom, freedom. Great. And then it turns out that they actually hate the guts of these people. And I have too, and I get that. So hatred, right, mm-hmm. of one's opponents mm-hmm. tends to lead one to be authoritarian themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think you're fabulously liberatory in your politics and sexuality for the most part, and then just in general. I was scared to talk to you about climate change, not because I knew a damn thing about your actual ideas about it, because I don't until now. But I do have a whole lot of experience with hundreds and hundreds and thousands of other people who care about climate change. And every single fucking one of them has essentially thought that I'm an evil person right. and a stupid person. And I have lost friends over this.
Right.
Like friends from college. I mean, people who I've been friends with for decades gone because of fucking climate change. Because I just said, are you sure? And this is actually on Facebook. I said, are you sure we're going to be underwater in 2050? That was it.
Right.
I can't be your friend anymore.
Right.
So I kind of assumed that you would be like there's a lot of Jews who are like awesome on everything until Israel. Until you get to Israel, and then all of a sudden it's like, we need to kill the Arabs and Netanyahu's a nice guy, right?
Right.
So a lot of my progressive or liberal friends are like that too. Since I'm totally pro-choice, that's never an issue. But climate change is just like abortion.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
If you have the wrong anything right. at all, even if there's just the slightest whiff that you're slightly skeptical, you gotta go, you suck.
For sure.
So you're not.
You
tolerate my skepticism.
I mean, I think that I really believe that diversity of thought is as important as diversity of skin color or gender or sex or sexual identity or whatever. I mean, for one thing, I don't think that siloing ourselves away off into these camps where we only speak to people who agree with us 100% on every issue is good for anybody. I think it's terrible for everybody, because then you get these places like you mentioned Brett Weinstein, these, you know, places like Evergreen that are just monocultures. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's helpful. I could sit down and have a conversation with somebody who thinks abortion is murder, no problem. I mean, it's just
How did you get that? Because you're not like anybody else like that.
Because
on either side.
I try to be rational. That's the one thing that I want to be. I want to be rational. Mm-hmm. And I think that the rational move is to engage in conversation with people you might disagree with and not say, because you believe this other thing, you're bad or you're evil or you're trash. I don't believe that. I don't even believe that humans are good and evil. It's just a different perspective. And it might be a wrong perspective. But if I wasn't going to be friends with people who I didn't think were right about everything, I wouldn't be friends with any feminist. I wouldn't be friends with any environmentalist either. I wouldn't be friends with any. I mean, I actually don't have that many friends. So
maybe not anymore.
This, I don't. I mean, maybe this has served me poorly. Now I tend to.
Or you're making new friends.
Well, and you know what? My new friends are all over 60. I have, like, my friends in Seattle are all old people.
Interesting.
And I fucking love them.
Yeah.
Young people and I don't mesh as well.
How did that happen?
Just like kind of connections through work, other writers in the city. There's a group of two women who I hang out with. One's in her 60s, one's in her 70s or maybe 80s. And I go to her boathouse and smoke cigarettes inside. And we just like talk about reality and can have frank conversations without, you know, being worried about the thought police coming for us. Hmm. So I prefer old people now to young people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't to say that my position, I think, in this has necessarily served me well in all respects, but I think people just need to be more rational.
Hmm.
You know what? Even like Donald Trump has done a couple of things that are okay. Mm-hmm. One thing I can think of with the police reform or sentencing reform.
Yeah.
Not that this was his doing at all.
It was a half step in a decent direction. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
But I mean, but one that's sort of orchestrated by the Koch brothers, you know, two people who would be, for sure be considered enemies of the environmental movement. But they're mm-hmm. also the people who have orchestrated this, this, you know, criminal justice reform. So
right.
I don't know. You can agree with people you don't agree with on some things.
Okay. we're good then. I'm fine. Okay. You're way less scary than I thought you were going to be. You're also fucking hilarious.
Oh, I thank you.
And that's unusual in a lot of ways. Like, it's just not. So, like, anybody who's in this world, the media world, well, the stranger's sort of an exception, but, like, it's just, yeah. And then it's just true. Women generally tend not to be funny.
Well, what's a woman, really?
And then there's that question.
I think fat women are funny.
I think
black men and fat women are the two funniest populations.
You have an explanation for that?
Yeah, adversity makes you funny.
Oh, just adversity, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe there's something genetic about it. But probably I think it's more adversity. I mean, I'm clearly like, I'm joking and making a generalization here, so nobody yell at me.
Oh, I like it. But you're neither.
It's all a construct. I'm not yet. I could be one of not both of those in the future.
Last thing I'm going to say to you. Just be careful with this rationality thing, too. Like, I get it. I play the game. That's what we're doing right now. Like, most of this conversation has been totally within the rational realm, and we're kind of privileging rationality here, right? We're making arguments, and evidence is important.
Rational
and
privilege,
logic. Yeah, we're privileging rationalism. But, I also know that that's the same history, though. That rationalism has also built a closet, you know?
Sure.
Because this reminds me of my father. It's like, he used to say, he was like this complete maniac, nudist, fucking his girlfriends in front of me, smoking weed, whatever.
Okay, weed's fine, but nobody needs to see their parents have sex.
Yeah, well, especially with a man, right? No, but because y'all are
true.
Like,
two mommies would be
it's
different.
Like gross, right, for you to see that. Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that I seek out. Let's just put it that way.
You don't watch a whole lot of straight porn?
I don't, and I don't
not
walk
a whole lot.
Okay, I've actually only watched porn one time in my life, and it was at the Hump Film Festival.
What?
Yeah, I wrote about it last year for the paper. My one and only time.
Second person, yeah. My girlfriend's the other one who's only seen porn once, and it was in a gender studies class in which they were showing only the worst, like, rape, murder porn, you know? And then they said, this is basically all that goes on Pornhub.
Well, Hump is a very intersectional porn festival. So it was in public. You know what I'm talking about, Hump?
No.
So Hump is Dan Savage's pornography festival.
Oh, no.
So he's been doing this for 10 years. So it's amateur. People make their own films. They send them in.
Oh, wow.
A coalition of people judge them, and then they screen film festivals all over the country. So you're sitting in a theater watching sex.
How is it different from Pornhub?
Well, you're in a theater.
Okay.
So it's only done. It's
social.
Only you like after you can't get this shit online. This only happens in the theater. The whole idea of Hump is that you can be a porn star for a night and not for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
So Dan's been doing this forever.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, our conservative.
That's so cool.
Marriage apologist.
Well, he's so not at the same time always. He's so radical in so many ways, and then he'll say these things about marriage and
He was a really
going to a Mariners game with his husband and his son. I was like, bleh.
They snowboard.
They what?
They snowboard.
They snowboard?
Yeah. He's a gay man. Two gay men who snowboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Full of contradictions.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, no, we're all good. But my dad used to, so he was all about that stuff and like all these pleasurable things. But then he was also a computer programmer and an engineer and was totally like rationality and objective facts. And, you know, it's all, he hated my postmodernism. Like he would literally yell at me, right? So, and I was like, and he would say things like, well, having a nice meal, like, what's the point? Because it goes away. You forget it after an hour. You know, I was like, I wanted to say to Dad, what about sex? Like, what's rational about that?
Right.
And nothing, you know, what did you gain materially from having sex?
Biological impulse.
Yeah. But, like, it's irrational. Sex is irrational.
Oh, for sure.
That's why it's great.
Right. And also because you orgasm at the end of it.
And the
hopefully.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Like, I mean, that's why it's great, because you...
Just the orgasm?
I mean, that's part of it.
Oh, well, it has a nice ending, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, so, I mean, like, this again, this is like queer theory or politics 101. It's like, when we hear rationalism, we start to get nervous, because that's often been deployed against people's sexual freedom, and not just against gays, right? Fucking, it's been used against straight men as long as eternity, right? It's like, you're not being rational because you're not a soldier, you're not a worker, you're not producing out there. Men's sexuality gets punished all the time. It's just we don't see it. We don't talk about it, right? We're not actually, when you look, we're literally looking at the streets of Seattle right now. I don't see men like rampaging around fucking people.
Well, that's because we're on the east side of the park. If we were on the west side of
the
park.
Is that where it goes on? It goes down over there?
It goes down at the other end.
I see a guy playing softball with a pink uniform, and I'm really enjoying that.
Also queer.
I bet he is. And there's a softball field across.
I don't know if that's a guy. That could be. Who knows?
Hey, what do you mean by that?
Exactly.
Just, look what you did.
Let's not assume anyone's gender around here.
I just
here.
Love the matching socks with the pink uniform.
He does look good. They do look good.
And he's a nice shortstop, right? I think he actually knows how to play.
Anyway. I mean, you could be misgendering him right now, but we'll accept it.
He's definitely a shortstop. I'll say that. So you get what I'm saying, though, right?
Like, I do.
So I'm not telling you never to be rational or to never say rationalism is good or rationality is good or whatever. And you know, obviously, people are irrational in all sorts of ways. But I'm just saying, be careful.
No, I think you're right.
It scares me.
I think what I have. So since my sort of depersoning after I wrote this article about detransition,
yeah.
It opened my, like, if that hadn't happened, I would probably be on a more woke train. But it was this really sort of this life-changing experience in a lot of ways, because it opened my eyes to the fact that, like, I was like, holy shit, wait, if all of these leftists, which I am, are attacking me, and I know that they're wrong because I've looked at the data, I've done the interviews, I've done the research, and I know they're wrong about this, what else are they wrong about? And so since this happened, I've been on sort of this path of becoming non-ideological. And so, which is why I have sort of some second thoughts about calling myself a feminist now, something that I was raised to be, because I'm starting to think that all ideology is bad. Not bad, but has the potential to be destructive. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. instead of when you have Camille Foster would, I think, say mm-hmm. this, when your identity is wrapped up in something, in a cause, then you can't look at that cause rationally.
Yeah, well, it's also building your own closet.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
That's something that Camille wouldn't say, but you would,
sure.
And I would. Yeah, but it's the same point,
yeah.
I think, right? And it becomes a box, a closet, a container, a jail. Wendy Brown calls it a plastic prison because it moves with you
mm-hmm.
all the time, you know? Yeah, so that's why I don't ever identify as anything.
Right, yeah.
I try not to.
I think that is the evolved position to take. I mean, I am a registered Democrat, but that's so that I can.
We've got to change that.
I need to. I like to vote in the primaries.
Can we go
man.
Do the paperwork right now? Can we do that online?
No, primaries are important to me.
Okay, you'll get over that by next year.
I might not be voting by the time we get to the next election.
So you lost a bunch of friends. You feel like you've been depersoned. You said that
depersoned, but then repersoned.
Yeah. So I mean. I know that you've already started making some new friends in various ways, not just the old woman on the boat, but you know, new political friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, be careful there too. I don't need to tell you that. But,
oh,
you know,
for sure.
Yeah,
I think you know. I've told a lot of people when I see somebody going through a pile-on, I will sometimes reach out to them. I like to send people Alice Drager's book. I've bought probably 15 copies of that book in the past year and a half to send to people because it's a good guide. So is John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Also a great text for people who've been mm-hmm. under the dog pile.
Yeah.
But when I sort of am like reaching out to people and talking about these things, and one thing that often comes up, especially people who write sort of critically about trans issues, other people that you don't want to be your friend will offer their friendship to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very alluring, as I'm sure you know. And you have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And I'm super aware of that. But also, like, a couple of years ago, the only men that I was friends with were gay. I like had sort of a hard and fast rule about spending time with straight men, which was, and now that I see, now it's, I think it's an incredibly fucked up way to thing to believe, but that's all over my community. I was looking at Facebook yesterday and a good friend of mine posted on Facebook. I went to a bunch of bars in Seattle recently and they were all terrible. They were misogynistic, transphobic, homophobic. Where are the good queer and misandrous bars these days? And I'm just like, do you really fucking believe this? You like identify as someone who, as a misandrist.
Yeah, that's
people do. People like
this, they do really.
They, I didn't, oh yes, yes. In the queer community
does,
in Seattle,
really? Our fears are true. Like,
oh
about,
no, it's true. This only happens in radical queer communities. But
yeah.
That's not a. And the funny thing is, a lot of these people are also in the process of transitioning into men,
mm-hmm.
which there's some irony there.
Yeah, a bit.
But that's not like they're the this idea of like, you know. Feminazis, they exist. I'm friends with them.
Hatred of men is a virtue.
Hatred of men is a virtue. And of course, everybody makes exceptions. They say, I like my cousin or my boss
right.
or my dad or whatever. But broadly
and,
speaking.
And to be very clear, and I know you agree with me. This is a tiny, tiny percentage of the population. Of course. This is a tiny little community, but it is hardcore within it.
Right. And it's also true that I think that much of the, you know, problems of the world do stem from men, just because men have been in power longer. But that's
I thought we agreed that it was voluntary on both parts. Like, in other words, that women and men sort of agreed over millennia to divide the labor in these ways, right?
Sure.
Men do the killing and the wars, and the women
I think it's the
repress
public,
us in the home.
Yeah, but I think it's the public policy that I'm sort of more
women
about.
Do the repressing, men do the oppressing.
Right. Well, now I don't know if you saw this, but the entire military industrial complex is now headed by women.
I totally you probably got that from me. I tweeted that shit.
Yeah, progress.
That was amazing. I know. I said so. Feminism is won. Everything will be better now.
Yeah.
Now that they run Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. Katie Herzog, you're kind of awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't hear that very much. Mostly I hear you're a cunt, but I'll take awesome.
You're an awesome cunt.
Thank you.
Anything else you want me to tell you?
No, we can end on I'm an awesome cunt.
I think you are.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for this. Seriously, yeah. It's been great.
Thank you for having me.
This was the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. To support the show and become a member of the Unregistered community, go to unregisteredunderground.com. To get information and to buy tickets to the Renegade University weekend events in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., go to ThaddeusRussell.com/courses. Thanks for listening.